Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jolene, and I'm representative of the SAYESA, which is the South African Energy Storage Association South Africa. I'm a MANCO member and spokesperson. Through all the presentations we've seen today and yesterday, there seems to be a common thread of four key points, which is one, security of supply, two, to minimize costs, three, the impact on the environment, and four is to minimize water usage. SAYESA sees and supports the renewable energy sector, proving they can execute to all these points. And collectively with them, we also identify the need to focus on the growing of the economy, the just jobs transition, the relieving of unemployment with a net gain in jobs, and the reduction of poverty and quality and improvement of quality of life. All of this can be driven by endogenous process and approach that, with a basket of the buzz-suited new technologies, there is the ability to retire coal at the pace of when it becomes uneconomical to run or environmentally irresponsible. And it's not a stop-start approach. We've listened to a lot of feelings and a lot of emotions. And I think one of the key things that we need to address, that the transition and the energy transition, as with global players, is not an event. It's a transition that is going to be over a period of 20 years with an effective plan to suit all. So SAYESA wishes to present as a technology how, as an ancillary service, we are an enabler to all of the above holistically and in support. The South African Energy Storage Association was constituted in March 2018 to advocate and advance the development of an energy storage industry in South Africa. The membership includes manufacturers, suppliers, electrical utilities, municipal distributors, financiers, and end users of such systems. SAYESA's function is to ensure that business plays a constructive role in the country's economic growth, development, and energy transformation, and to create an environment which supports the just energy transition so that all sectors can thrive, expand, and be competitive. As SAYESA, we welcome the opportunity to present its preliminary comments on the Draft Integrated Resource Plan, IRP 2018, to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Energy. Our comments are preliminary and may be subject to changes or additions before final submission to the DOE. As SAYESA and ASARIC, we support a power system in South Africa that is based on a least cost per month, allows the fiscus to be prioritized to government's core service delivery requirements, facilitate greater energy access at affordable pricing, create and catalyze, through the provision of cheap electricity, a net gain of jobs anticipated by the just energy transition, and will encourage localization in the PV value chain and wind and related technologies, and follow through on decarbonization. Our overarching goal is, in the light of recent announcements of large-scale infrastructure program by President Ramaphosa and the Job Summit Framework, whilst energy was not mentioned in the Job Summit Framework agreement signed between NEDBAC social partners, SAYESA believes that access to secure and competitively priced electricity will be a critical component to the sector, to the success of other sectoral plans. SAYESA believes that the IRP confirms recent pronouncements made by government, by the National Planning Commission and others, that South Africa is embarking on an energy transition to a decarbonized electricity system, and that the renewable energy and storage will become key contributors in that process, both in the utility and in the better generation sectors. We also understand that this transition requires this industry to play a constructive role, ensuring that this transition is a just one and provides opportunities for workers that will be affected the most. Collectively, renewable energy and storage can develop an industry development plan that can directly support the just energy transition through job creation, ownership, enterprise development, and socioeconomic spend and skill training in declining regional mining economies. To achieve this requires a focus to support renewable energy development zones in the declining gold and coal mining areas. Business, labour, and all spheres of government need help to collaborate, not only to protect the jobs of mine workers, but also to provide new opportunities to the millions of unemployed in South Africa. To make such a plan reality requires us to challenge the status quo thinking that the energy transition cannot deliver a just transition. Energy storage systems provide a wide array of technology approaches, and I'm sorry if I have to take you through something which is slightly technical, but we want to represent the storage as the technology and what it can do. To manage our power supply in order to create a more resilient energy infrastructure and to bring cost savings to utilities and to consumers, To help understand the diverse approaches currently being deployed around the world, we've divided this into six main categories. Solid-state batteries, which is a range of electrochemical storage solutions, including advanced chemical batteries and capacitors. Flow batteries, where the energy is stored directly in the electrolyte solution for longer life cycle. Flywheels, which is on your mechanical storage side, mechanical devices that harness rotational energy to deliver instantaneous electricity. Compressed air storage, utilizing compressed air to create potent energy reserve. Thermal, capturing heat and cold to create energy on demand. And pumped hydropower, creating large-scale reservoirs of energy with water. Internationally, these are the defined six categories of storage. The applications for storage. Energy storage provides a myriad of beneficial services and cost savings to our electric grid, and companies are deploying storage technologies for a large number of different purposes. Large-scale energy storage also allows today's electrical system to run significantly more efficiently, and that greater efficiency means lower prices, less emissions, and more reliable power. Traditionally, energy sources like coal and natural gas power plants had to be turned on and off as demand fluctuates or are almost never operating at peak performance. This means that energy not only costs more, but pollutes more. And it is necessary to meet our energy needs. And the slow ramp-up time of these bulk generation facilities means that they cannot respond to the spikes in demand in real time, potentially leading to brownouts and to poor power quality. With the widespread adoption of renewable energy resources, energy storage is equally useful. As it is often noted, these energy sources are intermittent in nature, producing energy when the sun is shining and when the wind is blowing. By storing the energy produced and delivering it on demand, these clean technologies can continue to power our grid, even when the sun is set or the air is still, leveling out jumps in the output to create a continuous, reliable stream of power throughout the day. But warehousing energy from diverse resources for use at different times is only one of the many applications of energy storage. Storage technologies also improve the quality of power because it has the ability to do frequency regulation, allows companies to produce power when it's cheapest and most efficient, and provides uninterruptible source of power for critical infrastructure and for services. A next generation energy grid without energy storage is like a computer without a hard drive, severely limited. The worldwide demand for grid-scale energy storage has reached over 185.4 gigawatt hours by 2018, which is approximately the amount of electricity New York City consumes in 17 days. That represents a $113.5 billion incremental revenue opportunity for industry that currently generates sales of $50 to $60 billion a year. South Africa cannot afford to be left behind. Our comments to the IRP 2018. The draft IRP 2018 recognizes that an unconstrained renewable technology scenario is the least cost option till 2030, which we applaud. Furthermore, policy adjustment scenarios are mostly unpacked in the document to allow further understanding of the rationale. We note that up to 2030, there is no specific allocation for any other storage technologies, and our inquiries in the matter revealed that the distributed energy storage capacity is lumped in with the 200 megawatt per year allocation in a better generation. We have made comments based on this assumption. In general, the success of this IRP plan depends on restructuring of the industry, which is currently unsustainable. Our lead-in is the Asset Association. We welcome the agreement between Eskom and its financiers, the World Bank, to invest in 175 megawatts, which is an 800 megawatt hour of energy storage systems in lieu of the abandoned project, which was a conditional part of the new build loans. However, we do not see a capacity mentioned anywhere in the draft IRP. This is a significant committed investment that has already had an impact on the price of Eskom power, and therefore should be included in the plan. The investment also presents an opportunity by linking the storage assets not only to Eskom distribution networks that need strengthening, but also the municipal networks that are in an even worse state, thereby utilizing these assets to create better benefits to the country. While we do not have detailed knowledge of the input parameters nor the boundaries used for the current IRP model, our concern is that distributed energy storage may be significantly undervalued for the benefits, particularly for the non-Eskom distribution industry, and we have not been correctly factored in. An analysis of the modeling parameter sheets that we use in the regional IRP 10 were done to understand where distributed energy storage may have an impact on the modeling. Distributed storage was not a significant factor in the time of the IRP 2010, and only large centralized energy storage in the form of pump storage was modeled in. Pump storage, which is only practical, is done on a mega project scale, was included as part of the energy mix parameter sheet, and factored in as an alternative to a gas peaking generation plant. Of the set of 30 or so parameter sheets used in the IRP 2010 modeling, we have identified that the distributed energy storage has a direct impact on the parameters detailed below. We suspect that these impacts have not been properly included in the 2018 modeling. If the factors were properly included, we would be certain that independent allocation for distributed energy storage would have been a clear result. Decentralized non-hydro storage is not mentioned under the missing technology for page 73. We are convinced that not only have the benefits of this kind of storage not been adequately included in the modeling, but it has been overlooked as a serious key emerging technology player. Motivations for storage, distribution infrastructure, expansion and refurbishment. There is reportedly a 70 billion rand backlog in the distribution infrastructure maintenance, a portion of which includes the distribution network strengthening, often to service only short duration peak loads. This work involves the replacement of existing distribution, infrastructure cabling, and a very expensive and disruptive activity. Optimally located energy storage can permanently avoid a significant component of this and can simultaneously provide a form of standby power for commercial consumers and protect the local economy in the event that there is grid failure or load shedding. The life of an aging distribution infrastructure is also extended when the network can be de-stressed through peak load reductions that energy storage will deliver. There may be a significant portion of backlog that may be addressed using storage, bringing the additional benefit of daily tariff arbitrage to reduce bulk energy procurement costs. On the price cone, in the IRP 2010, the price cone was defined as the average price of Eskom power to South Africa. This is not a true reflection of the price that the end user actually experiences and excludes any financially efficient measures that may be possible within the distribution networks not managed by Eskom. Of all the medium voltage distribution networks in South Africa, it is estimated that 60% of them are outside of Eskom, which is significant. It is the municipal distribution industry that holds the bulk of the peaky residential loads in the country. And as from 2019, all municipalities that purchase Eskom power for on-selling will only be able to purchase such power on a time of use basis. In effect, this inflates the municipal distributor's price code, as it is these residential peaks that are difficult to control and expensive to service when purchasing power on the Eskom Megaflex local authority tariff in order to service these loads. The arbitrage value of energy storage is critical to a non-Eskom distributor, and aside from geyser control systems, it's probably the only other practical tool available to municipal distributors to avoid or to limit exposure to the Eskom peak energy pricing. In addition to high exposure to peak energy prices, many municipal distributors are heavily penalized by the NMD, the notified maximum demand charges, that could be reduced or avoided. When sufficient energy storage can be stored on their networks downstream of the Eskom bulk supply meter, if the latest IRP modeling does not result in allocation for storage, the base value of this component for the IRP would be the case where it's placed at the weakest points identified within the entire distribution system, including municipal networks. This means most of the facilities would be likely placed outside of the Eskom networks. The best for the country as a whole is probably the case where Eskom owns and maintains the facilities, even if they are located on the non-Eskom networks. They will still earn peak energy revenues for Eskom, but it will eliminate the nominated demand penalty that municipalities are paying. The cost of the unserved energy. In terms of protecting the economy, the best location for South Africa's energy storage assets, whether they are private or utility-owned, is to place the facilities on the customer's premises and to run them as power islands in the event of grid outages or the need to load shed around. This will help to keep the economy going by providing a degree of resilience to these customers while maintaining revenues for the distributors while they restore their grids or they comply with load shedding directives. In times of constraint to reduce demand in the past, Eskom initiated power buyback initiatives, in effect paying large industrial customers not to consume power. This was rather well supported in the initiative, as it effectively shut down a portion of the economy as these businesses simply closed shop. If it's assumed that those businesses were to gain access to large-scale storage systems, they could participate in demand response program that would have the same effect, but allow economic activity to continue as per normal. The modeling should take this locational benefit into account and not simply regard storage as an alternative to a peaking plant, as is in the case of the large-scale pump storage. Demand and consumption. The EDI certainly has seen a reduction in volumes of the energy sold over the last decade, but has not necessarily seen a corresponding reduction in instantaneous maximum demand. Some distributors have seen actually an increase in the peak demand, hence increasing the nominated demand penalty trend. Particularly where significant electrification programs have been rolled out. While the REP can be viewed as a generation plan for the country, it is equally important to see it as a distribution network plan. While overall energy demand will eventually turn and grow again, network capacity is needed right now to deliver the power, the profile of which became more peaky as universal access to electricity plans progressed. Increasing urbanization with its characteristic peaky load is expected to continue, as is densification due to the residential redevelopment, townhouse complex, and the backyard shack phenomenon. Of relevance here is a peak demand growth, its impact on existing networks, and how strategically placed energy storage can manage and reduce the costs associated with this type of growth. The energy storage systems are very powerful demand-side management tools, as they can behave both as scheduled loads and as scheduled energy sources. As a result, they will also be able to see the establishment of a very effective demand response program between Eskom and municipal distributors, and similarly between municipal distributors and their large customers. Such a program would have cheaper options than investments in yet more gas-fired peaking plants, and will become more relevant as more and more non-dispatched renewable energy gets connected to both Eskom and to municipal grids. The key issue here is that energy storage isn't only a DSM tool when it's placed on the demand side of the meter, and this is where the value truly lies. The IEP model should be adjusted to take this into account, to expand the model boundaries all the way through to the end customer, and not to stop at the Eskom meter. Renewables and storage. While the most obvious benefit of a private renewable energy investor optimizing the self-consumption on a privately owned renewable energy system has already been detailed, what if perhaps not as obvious is the concept of scaling this up to a municipality or citywide level. Should the updated IRP make an allocation for municipal owned or municipally contracted renewable energy connected directly to the grid, then the ability to make a portion of that energy dispatchable using energy storage facilities will be a significant benefit to municipalities to reduce the cross-subsidy required for the low-income residential sector. Energy storage will alleviate the expensive ramp rate issues that the inevitable duck curve that will develop in South Africa as more and more photovoltaic generation is connected to the grid operations in South Africa. Prepared for the Department of Energy and Eskom in 2017 found that the 2035 clean costs of non-renewable energy generation, such as coal, will increase 300% from current levels to the USD 0.86 per megawatt hour due to steeper ramp rates. This must be factored into the IRP in the future. The reserve margin. Maintaining the reserve margin in an unconstrained power system is usually an exercise in most economic dispatch of whatever generation is available. The aforementioned Assessing the Impact of Increasing Shares of Variable Generation on the System Operations in South Africa report also highlighted that the operating reserve and system reserve would need to increase by 80% for the time period between 3 and 6. All of these can be addressed by instantaneous response capabilities of energy storage. Where energy storage is rolled out across the country, either indirectly through time of use tariffs or directly controlled by the system operator through automated demand response agreements, this will be the most cost-effective way of maintaining the required reserve margin. In a California case, PV plus storage has already become available at a lower cost than a gas turbine peaking plant. With limited gas supplies currently available in South Africa, this is also likely to be the case for us. The value of utility scale energy storage is increased the further down the grid the energy value chain it is placed. This is due to the increasing value or stacking of both technical and financial benefits of the storage facilities as they are located deep into the network. For example, a 100 megawatt hour storage system placed at a point on Eskom's high voltage transmission network can provide a means to store surplus renewable energy at a national level, avoid transmission network bottlenecks, provide frequency support for the national generation industry, and these are only benefits can only be realized in the case where the system is connected to the transmission network. However, if the same as energy storage capacity of 100 megawatt hours was deployed by strategically placing 25 smaller 4 megawatt hour systems further downstream on the medium voltage distribution network, not only could the above mentioned benefits be realized, but the system could add further value through energy purchasing arbitrage, the alleviation of distribution network bottlenecks or overloads, the avoidance of Eskom's notified demand charge penalties, the deferment of network refurbishment or network upgrade capital expenditure, improvement of a power factor over the entire transmission and distribution network, realizing a significant improvement of security supply to customers and providing a measure of standby power to the end customers as an alternative to diesel power. This increasing value of stacking is critically dependent on where the network storage system is located. The highest value of all end customers and the economy as a whole can be realized where these energy storage systems are strategically placed and the so-called grid edge, and designed to run as independent power islands or mini-grids to maintain supply to one or a group of end customers in the event of load shedding or unplanned grid outages. The optimal location concept must be acknowledged if its full value of distributed energy storage is to feature in the RFP. It is simply the interconnectedness of the grid that enables all the above-mentioned benefits to be realized, even when the facilities are placed at the lower extremities of the grid. The realization of all the stack benefits is subject to a certain operational conditions. This includes operating the system every day for tariff arbitrage purposes. And even if there is a strong correlation between the natural load peak and the predefined peak tariff periods, to realize the generation and transmission benefits requires that the overall control of the storage facilities is made available to Eskom as a national system operator. With today's telecommunication system, this is very easy to establish. Tariff arbitrage is the practice of storing cheap off-peak energy for later release during peak times when the cost of energy is much higher. The full realization of the stack benefit requires that storage facilities be located on the municipal distributor side of the Eskom meter, and in the case where municipal distributors passes on the time of use tariffs to customers, on the customer side of the municipal meter. A potential new service and revenue stream can be realized where through a negotiation with key customers to locate the storage facilities at their premises, the distributor can provide a measure of secure standby power to the customer in the event of network outages. This new service is possible because today's energy storage systems are designed to operate in islanded or microgrid mode. Our specific recommendations to the IRP: create a separate new allocation for distributed energy storage. We propose that distributed energy storage should not be part of the embedded generation allocation, as this is earmarked for renewable energy sources, which, while intended for own use, still contribute to the total quantum of primary energy into the system. While a storage system is designed to generate when it is in discharge mode, it requires energy from a primary source when it's in charging mode. It is rather a consumer of primary energy and not an energy source in itself. It simply changes the time that the primary energy generated is drawn from the system into the storage and the time it's made available again. This is an incredibly useful feature. We are also of the opinion that the 200 megawatts per annum allocation for embedded generation will be taken up rapidly with the potential to crowd out storage plants and the additional benefits they offer. Reallocate a portion of the gas peaking plant allocation to the distributed storage energy allocation. In reality, energy storage systems displace diesel and gas-fired peaking plants. This applies to energy storage deliberately linked to some form of renewable energy to maximize self-consumption, as well as storage installed for arbitrage purposes, all energy storage installations for that matter. Gas generation for peaking and for mid-period power generation has a sizable allocation of 8,100 megawatts starting in 2026, of which we believe a significant portion of the peaking component may be better provided by energy storage. By that time, energy storage systems will be 7 years cheaper than what they are today. In our opinion, one weakness of the draft IRP is that the model boundaries used were not expanded beyond the Eskom meter. If the model is to properly take into account the additional costs that the end consumers on the municipal distribution networks actually see, the model needs to be revised. Note, municipal consumers are approximately 60% of the total population and approximately 40% of the national load. If model boundaries were extended across all distribution networks up to municipal meters, it would immediately become apparent that gas-fired peaking plants or an equivalent such as storage. This would allow better utilization of the lowest cost coal power stations and allow timely retirement of the older stations that are expensive to operate. The uptake of storage will have a positive impact on the utilization of existing coal generation assets and can alleviate some of the envisaged job loss challenges that the transition from coal will bring over time. This can be accomplished through providing construction and O&M opportunities in the storage. The sustainability of low-cost coal stations will also improve through the increased utilization and stabilizing the jobs associated with these plants. This is in contrast to all the peaking capacity provided by gas peaking power plants, as they do not contribute to the optimization of off-peak coal utilization. We propose that a more in-depth review of the provision of peak load power be undertaken in terms of the IRP process. The model should be set up to cater for the least cost mix of mid-merit and peak power provision, considering known statistics of the existing diesel peaking plants, their potential conversion to mid-merit plants using gas, any new gas peaking plants, as well as energy storage technology. The exercise could be undertaken not only to establish the least cost, but also include socioeconomic benefits, as I mentioned above. We believe that this will lead to a better and a more informed and defensible IRP. So I mentioned the allocation for distributed energy storage. In terms of our first recommendation for a separate distributed energy storage plant allocation to be created, we further recommend for that as a start, the allocation should match that of the 200 megawatts currently allocated for embedded generation. This will provide a means to at least optimize the energy generated within the embedded generation category at the distribution level. The allocation can be adjusted as market conditions change and future iterations of the IRP are run that include the true value of distributed energy storage in future. In terms of the likely scale for distributed energy storage allocation, the importance for utilization is a demand-side management tool by distributors to manage their peak loads as well as to mitigate it against load shedding cannot be underestimated. Battery-based energy storage systems are far more superior to geyser control systems and load-limiting metering systems, as the recharging cycles can be done many hours after the peak has subsided. They do not have to be restrictively short load restoration that traditional load shifting schemes have. It is not unreasonable to consider the allocation should be sufficient to mitigate at least stage one load shedding going forward, particularly as it has become evident that the future prospect of load shedding cannot be ignored. Normally, stage one load shedding requires a 10% reduction in load. The winter evening peak load for country last year was around 59 gigawatts. 10% of that would have been 3.9 gigawatts. To depress the load by this amount for 4 hours would require total storage capacity of 15.6 gigawatts. Roughly divided into 7 metro distributors in the country, each would require 560 megawatt hours worth of power with a storage capacity 560 megawatts worth of power with a storage capacity of 2,240 megawatt hours to avoid any stage one load shedding. This will be a worthwhile investment in protecting the economy, particularly if the storage is located on site of key customers. A large metro typically delivers 25 gigawatts of electricity per day, or at least 5 gigawatts of this is delivered during the peak period. Aspiring to the ability to reduce the peak energy and maximum demand liabilities by just 2 gigawatts each day using energy storage systems is reasonable. Such capabilities have the potential to significantly reduce costly peak energy charges in bulk purchases and the nominated demand penalty costs where load has grown beyond the capacity of the existing structure. There are 7 metros currently, and it could be argued that by 2030, 14 gigawatt hours worth of storage in our energy system would be a reasonable quantum to consider. We request the separation of allocations for gas into centralized gas generation and distributed gas generation. Consider refining the classified generation allocation to define how much should be centralized and how much can be distributed in order to realize the added benefit of improving the security of supply to industry and large power users in the distribution in areas where gas pipelines are available for both municipal and Eskom areas. Natural gas generation at peak periods is becoming cost comparable to Eskom's peak energy pricing. There are significant opportunities for gas power, combined heat and power generation precincts in metropolitan areas that will have far greater economic value than centralized open gas cycle gas turbines. And lastly, we request for the updated cost for energy storage and incorporate learning rates for future years. The gazetted IRP uses international benchmark for technologies not currently deployed in South Africa. For example, it states the new combined gas cycle engine costs were based on information provided by Wärtsilä as part of the public input. Similar up-to-date costs should be used for batteries and for other types of energy storage, where multiple credible sources available to provide both capital and operating costs. Such reports also included expected learning rates for these technologies. We encourage the department to reference multiple data points and use an average. These reports will be provided in our full submission. The table is up there, and I'll leave it to everyone to review at their leisure. We note that electrical vehicles are overlooked. Electrical vehicles possess the ability to decarbonize the road transportation on a national and on a global scale. The adoption rate of EVs will be highly dependent on the development of the EV value chain within South Africa. The International Energy Agency projects up to 220 million EVs by 2030 across the globe. Early projections for the EV adoption within South Africa estimates that up to 1 million EVs could be in circulation by 2030. By contrast, this could place up to 11 terawatt hours of additional unaccounted for demand in the energy system by the year 2030. This equates to roughly 3.7% of the demand forecast for 2030 as stated in the draft IRP. SAYUSA proposes that work is urgently undertaken with key stakeholders within the public and private sectors in order that the following be considered in the next IRP review: quantification of net energy demand forecast studies from the increased adoption of EVs in South Africa, inclusion of EVs to the scenario key put assumptions, investigation of vehicle-to-grid technologies for accurate modeling of distributed grids as a potential energy storage, review of the renewable energy embedded generation allocations to account for the projected demand for the adoption of the EVs, investigation into the reduction of the CO2 emissions as a result of future penetration of EVs and the replacement of ICE vehicles, and lastly, investigation into the effects of reduced oil imports due to reduction in the use of ICE vehicles. It is also recommended that all policy frameworks, regulations, and rules pertaining to electric vehicles, components manufacturing, charging, infrastructure, grid connection, and revised tariff structures be investigated by the department, as this would unlock the full potential of EVs in South Africa. As a result of the development and optimization of the value chain, EVs will reach and inevitably surpass price parity of that of ICE vehicles. Once this occurs, the market consensus would steer rapid adoption as EV alternatives demonstrate far-reaching benefits to the environment, to the society, and the growth of the economy as a whole. General comments to the IRP. The demand. The flexible approach proposed through frequent reviews of the IRP to manage the pace and scale of new capacity is welcomed. This flexibility is required to ensure that we do not plan for stranded assets. There are also questions that need to be considered, including what if Modipi and Kusile come online later than assumed, or if it's decided not to complete the remaining units at these stations. What if the load availability is less than assumed in the IRP 2018 at 80%, currently at 72%? What if existing Eskom plants are decommissioned earlier than planned due to technical and or environmental compliance requirements? Decommissioning of coal-fired power stations linked to the Air Quality Act requirements, though this requirement is for at least 6 stations, is mentioned. These stations are not reflected in the decommissioning schedule in Appendix 6. The revised AQA framework is likely to have a more significant impact on the life of the current coal fleet. General comments to the IRP, greenhouse gas emissions. The inclusion of a policy constraint on greenhouse gas emissions in line with the nationally determined contribution under the United States Framework Convention on Climate Change Paris Agreement is supported. Emissions from electricity generation account for 40% of South Africa's emissions. It is therefore makes sense that emissions from this sector are drastically reduced. SAYUSA believes that the best instrument to reduce emissions in this sector is the IRP. IRP 2018 states that it does not count the externalized costs of carbon emissions because the CO2 emissions constraints imposed during the technical modeling indirectly imposes the costs to CO2 from electricity generation. The IRP externalities are only for emissions from air to emissions to air from power station stacks. They do not take account the pollution of water, land, from stock, coal stockpiles, from ash heaps, and from acid deposition. In conclusion, SAYUSA, as an association, we value the opportunity to give our comments here today and to contribute to improving the country's energy system. We firmly believe in the just energy transition path and in energy transformation. We support an IRP for electricity that is rational, mechanistic, techno-economic planning process that determines the optimal mix of generation technologies and capacities and the least cost to economy necessary to meet the projected demand for electricity in the years ahead, with adequate security of supply while also meeting government's policy and socio-economic requirements and constraints. Such constraints may include meeting carbon emissions reduction commitments, meeting applicable environmental laws and regulations, minimization of water usage, but most of all, the biggest need in South Africa, maximizing job creation. In an uncertain world, where electricity demand cannot be accurately predicted in the years ahead, and where disruptive new technologies are emerging, the IRP is also about enabling flexible planning decisions of least regret. Thank you. So we appreciate the opportunity to be here.
election. Ms. Diane, I understand you will be making another presentation. Okay. I'll tell you about the time that you have when you come back. Sophia, are you ready? Okay.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Parliamentary Committee on Energy, my fellow presenters, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Naveshan Govinda. I am representing the South African Photovoltaic Industry Association. Honorable Chairperson, I'm sure by now you have heard every argument for and against the IRP in its current draft and the technology mix it contains. In the effort to reduce duplication and create efficiency, I will attempt to focus on a few key points. SAPFIA, as an industry association, welcomes the opportunity to present our preliminary comments on the draft Integrated Resource Plan 2018 to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Energy. By way of introduction, SAPFIA is a non-profit industry association with the aim to promote, develop, and grow the PV sector as part of a wider renewable energy industry in South Africa. Year on year, we have increased in membership to 194 companies represented by the association throughout the value chain of solar PV, from project development to manufacturing, to training, to consulting, to finance. Our understanding of the draft IRP, we would like to support a power system that is based on the least cost, which allows the fiscus to be prioritized to government's core service delivery requirements. We'd like to support a power system that facilitates greater energy access to affordable prices, which creates and catalyzes the net gain of jobs anticipated by the energy transition. And we would like to support a power system that encourages economic stimulation through localization and manufacturing. In support of the announced presidential infrastructure plan, it was stated, and I quote, renewable energy will be the sector that will help stimulate the economy through the provision of low-cost, low-carbon electricity that has a sustainable energy demand to support. Wind and solar in partnership with gas and battery storage can provide the stimulus for the growth of the green economy, which includes water reclamation, intensive farming, and agri-processing, to name a few. The global energy transition makes economic sense with its investment to shift to low-carbon technologies and solid socio-economic footprints. The NDP specifically articulates the need for South Africa to decarbonize its economy, and the latest IPCC has highlighted the need for governments to take urgent and decisive action to combat the current trajectory of global warming. The inclusion of policy constraints on greenhouse gas emissions in line with our commitment to the Paris Agreement is supported. The industry association would like to acknowledge and accolade the Department of Energy on achieving a draft IRP where the approach was rational in nature, the least cost scenarios were considered as the basis, the growth forecasts were more appropriate, the transparency was far greater than previous versions, the clearly defined scenario descriptions were presented, and value for money could be seen through the costing of these scenarios. The flexible approach proposed through frequent reviews of the IRP to manage the pace and scale of new capacity is welcomed. This flexibility is required to ensure that we do not plan for stranded assets. Chairperson, through our review process, we have considered a number of key questions which we would like to share with this Portfolio Committee on Energy. Firstly, what if Madupi and Kusile come online later than assumed, or if it was decided not to complete the remaining units of these stations? Secondly, what if the load availability is less than assumed in the IRP 2018 at 80%, currently at around 73.4%? What if the existing ESCOM plants are decommissioned earlier than planned due to technical and or environmental compliance requirements? The decommissioning of coal-fired power stations linked to the Air Quality Act requirements. Therefore, this requires for at least six stations is mentioned. These stations are not reflected in the decommissioning schedule in Appendix 6 of the IRP. Considering these key questions, and while the IRP forecasting is rational in its choices, we would like to point out a few optimistic assumptions in our opinion. Firstly, there's a sunk cost economic logic behind Madupi and Kusile. Secondly, the ability of the two coal IPPs being able to overcome the legal and financing challenges facing them to reach financial close. The affordability of the ESCOM decommissioning plan being used for the IRP 2018 analysis. The medium-term system adequacy due to issues around the timing and availability of the new built assets and coal IPPs, as well as primary energy constraints. A critical concern for us is that the IRP comments are to be submitted before the publication of the now-delayed ESCOM medium-term system operating report. We request commenting on the IRP 2018 be extended to allow for this consideration. SAPPEA believes that there are several key disruptive risks that the IRP has not considered adequately. The effect of electric vehicle penetration on electricity demands, the future deployment of stationary battery storage, the pent-up demand of small-scale embedded generation market. SAPPEA is aware that an existing backlog at NERSA, which will exhaust the entire allocation over the 4 years. We would therefore like to propose increasing the 2019 allocation for SSEG to 500 megawatts and ramp up over the next 5 years. We would also propose quantifying the backlog at NERSA awaiting approval and deal with this separately to give industry a chance. Aspects we have picked up that are not detailed in the modeling include the cost and technical parameter tables as used in the model are not made available. The cost assumptions for solar PV fixed tilt and tracking are expensive and outdated. The recommended plan does not report energy shares, only capacity, which makes it difficult to assess how much gas volumes are required in the recommended plan. Very conservative assumptions make the cost differential between scenarios seem smaller than they are. Very high cost assumptions for the grid connection for renewables, very low cost for coal and nuclear. Very low cost reduction assumed for renewables until 2015. SAPPEA is of the view that this detail is important to better understand the contribution that PV can provide. With regards to the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Procurement Program, the achievements are clearly reported by the DOE's IPP office. The 2 to 3 year delay that we have seen has devastated the industry as a collective. This has not been a policy issue, but rather an issue of implementation. Unfortunately, it has been local development and manufacturing companies that have borne the brunt of these delays. At least 4 solar PV manufacturing plants have opened and closed their doors over the last 5 years. Many electronic component factories have shut down lines due to the delays. Greater policy commitment is key to the survival of this industry and attraction of foreign investment. The infamous Table 7. We clearly see the 2023-2024 gap for the rollout of both solar PV and wind. This provides little confidence to investors and local players entering the industry. Our recommendations. We request clarity on the 1,800 megawatts determined by the Minister of Energy for round 4.5, turn to round 5, which is not evident in the IRP 2018 draft. We request clarity on the awarded small programs projects, which has not been committed or allocated in the draft IRP 2018. These could easily fill the gap between 2023 and 2024. To create a viable market that renewable energy is capable of, consistent commitment is required year on year. We propose an even distribution of solar PV allocations over the next 12 years until 2030, thereby eliminating the 2023-2024 vacuum. We propose additional comments to be considered post the release of the ESCOM medium-term result projections, and that the situation around the coal IPPs be evaluated and a decision of their future be made. The renewable sector is the only one with the ability for an accelerated uptake, and this should be noted as an optimal path for the IRP. With regards to small-scale embedded generation, the 1 to 10 megawatt component, SSEG creates an opportunity for greater local participation beyond the current supply industry model. It stimulates economic activities in the manufacturing, sales, and installation of renewable energy products. Commercial and residential customers are now able to realize savings from monthly electricity bills. It encourages new innovative ideas in the manner of how electricity distributors service their customers and creates new revenue streams. We believe partnerships between utilities, individual customers, and private businesses reduce the impact of electricity costs and enhances job opportunities. It is key that we consider the distribution infrastructure which will deal with the cost of unserved energy, forecasting and maintaining the demand and supply balance and the location of generation. SAPIA believes that municipal-owned renewable energy connected directly to their grids renders energy dispatchable and will be significantly beneficial to municipalities to reduce the cross-subsidy required for low-income residential sectors. SSEG renewables coupled with energy storage will alleviate the expensive ramp-up issues. Our recommendations. In the attempt to quantify this market segment, SAPIA requests the SSEG allocation viewed as a tracking placeholder rather than a cap. The market should not be constrained. We therefore propose a 500 megawatt allocation that is escalated over 5 years and will be instructive in informing the supply and demand balancing requirements, as well as informing future modeling of IRP revisions. There should be a separate allocation across technologies for municipalities that wish to generate and could be linked to the NDP or IDP target expectations, therefore on a percentage basis of total energy, which is incremental. Chairperson, I recognize your call for evidence-based research. We would like to clarify some of the job creation debates around renewables. The research I present has been done by Dr. Tobias Bishop Neems and has been verified by the CSIR. We have assumed that there's the same amount of output achieved, therefore 100 terawatt hours per annum. We assume and consider that direct and supplier jobs have been accounted for. We have used real numbers from the DOE IPP office and ESCOM that has provided the data. It is clear that the combination of solar and wind provides 31% more jobs than coal. SAPIA believes that it is the cost optimal to aim for 85% renewable electricity share by 2050. potential policy adjustments required to achieve this is to promote renewable energy infrastructure in declining mining areas, to deploy new energy infrastructure where the old energy infrastructure will ramp down, retain and migrate jobs gradually. It is expected that higher tariffs will be compensated by reduced grid integration costs, thereby reducing overall costs. This will make the socio-economic transition much easier. Other domestic technologies, which include CSP, biogas, pumped hydro, and batteries, should be flexible and dispatched by the system operator. Ramp down of the existing coal fleet must be done in a controlled manner. Priority must be given to new build optimal mix, which is solar PV, wind, and gas. South Africa could realize reduced carbon emissions and lead the African transition to create a low-cost, low-carbon energy hub. Chairperson, in conclusion, as an association, we value the opportunity to give our comments and contribute to improving the country's energy system. We firmly believe in a just energy transition path and actively promote transformation in the sector. In general, the success of the IRP plan depends on the restructuring of the industry, which is currently unsustainable. Solar PV, wind, and flexible power generators, which include gas, hydro, biogas, and batteries, are the cheapest new build mix for South Africa power, for the South African power system from a pure cost perspective. No new coal, no new nuclear. Any deviation from that would require a subsidy. In an uncertain world where electricity demands cannot be accurately predicted in the years ahead and where disruptive new technologies are emerging, the IRP should also provide enabling flexible planning decisions at least for at least regret. It is apparent that the country, that as a country, we are starting to take the right steps in the right direction to ensure the best future for our people of the country, promoting economic development by providing energy access at an affordable cost, thereby addressing poverty alleviation and creating a sustainable future. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honourable members and colleagues and interested stakeholders. My name is Jolene and I'm bank member for SARIC. I'm representing the SARIC submission today. The main objective of SARIC is to promote the renewable energy industry in South Africa by acting as an umbrella body to all the industry associations representing five specific renewable energy technologies like wind and solar, and we act as the collective custodian and voice for renewable energy industry in South Africa. As the umbrella body of renewable energy and storage associations in South Africa, SARIC represents the views of its members in several structures and bodies, each with a shared need as well as specific industry needs. SARIC welcomes the opportunity to present our preliminary comments on the draft IRP plan to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee today. Globally, energy is the linchpin of economic prosperity, with energy security, reliability, and affordability forming the key preconditions for sustainable growth. Today, the global energy scene is in a state of flux with a series of large-scale shifts. These shifts include technology advances and falling costs, for example, of PV and wind, as well as demographic and policy changes. Underlying each of these shifts is a common set of three policy goals facing the global community: combating climate change, providing universal energy access, and economic stability. The choices made already globally, both in the terms of policy and instruments, will be felt for decades with ripples around the world. How do we then apply this practically to suit South Africa in its needs and for all South Africans to think and to tick the boxes of the prescribed just energy transition. SARIC supports the energy sector development pathways need to move hand in hand with economic development, social priorities, and environmental needs. Focusing on only one specific goal can impede and actually increase the cost of other goals. We see the IOP as a framework and the technologies as placeholders. Technologies are advancing all the time. We might not see the same reflected technologies in years to come, but renewable with a flexible load supporter is the prescribed path. We implore government to workshop with the stakeholders, civil society, and labour to craft a practical implementation plan. In general, SARIC is pleased to note that the draft IOP appears to have considered and aims to address most of the key challenges identified in the IOP 2016 version. We are very pleased to note that it recognises an unconstrained renewable technology scenario as the least cost option to 230, and that technologies included, including gas, are placeholders for others going forward. That it provides flexibility, recognising the forecasts that need to be reviewed regularly, provides information on the policy adjustment scenarios for better understanding of the rationale behind it. Ultimately, the success of this plan depends on the restructuring of an industry which is currently unsustainable by introducing competition on an equal footing and improving the demand-supply balance to avoid both shortages and oversupply. SARIC supports a power system in South Africa that is based on renewables that are cheaper than all alternatives, cleaner than all alternatives, and creates a net gain of jobs, absorbing job shedding by existing technologies in the energy transition and one that has huge localization potential. Global energy transformation makes economic sense with its investment and shift to low-carbon technologies and to a solid socioeconomic footprint. The NDP envisions South Africa as a global player. And in line herewith, we need to transform. The current state of energy in South Africa poses a systemic risk to this country. In general, the recent announcements of large-scale infrastructure program by President Ramaphosa and the Job Summit framework hosted by NEDLAC and social partners, SARIC believes that access to secure and competitively priced electricity will be critical components to the success of the other sectorial plans. Commissions and that South Africa is embarking on an energy transition to a decarbonized electricity system, renewable energy and storage, and that it will become a key contributor in the process, in the utility, and in the embedded generation sectors. We also understand that this transition requires the industry to play a constructive role, ensuring that this transition is a just one and provides opportunities for workers that will be affected the most. Collectively, renewable energy and storage can develop an industry development plan that can directly support the just energy transition through job creation, ownership, enterprise development, and socioeconomic spend and skills training in the declining regional mining economies. To achieve this requires a focus to aid and to support renewable energy development zones in the declining gold and mining areas. Business, labour, and all spheres of government need to collaborate to not only protect the jobs of the mine workers, but also to provide new opportunities to the millions of unemployed in South Africa. To make such a plan a reality requires all of us to challenge the current status quo thinking. We support the power system that is based on the least cost premise. We support one that facilitates greater energy access at more affordable pricing, that allows the fiscus to be prioritized, and creates and catalyzes the net gain of jobs anticipated as a result of the energy transition and will encourage the localization. Renewable energy will be a sector that will help to stimulate the economy through the provision of low-cost, low-carbon electricity that has a sustainable energy demand to support. The global energy transition makes economic sense with its investment and shift to low-carbon technologies and solid socioeconomic footprint. The NDP specifically articulates the need for South Africa to decarbonize its economy, and the latest IPCC 1 report has highlighted the need for governments to take urgent and decisive action to combat the current trajectory of global warming. Our concerns on the IRP. Whilst the IRP forecasting is rational in its choices, it unfortunately requires us to accept the overly optimistic assumptions of the logic of the Medupi and Kasili power stations, the two coal IPPs, the affordability of Eskom's decommissioning plan, and coal IPPs as well as primary energy constraints. A further major concern is that the IRP comments are to be submitted prior to the delayed medium-term system operator report of ESCOM, and we also support the recommendation that the commenting period should allow for sites and inputs on this report. CO2 emissions and constraint concerns. The inclusion of a policy constraint on greenhouse gas emissions in line with the nationally determined NDC under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and the Paris Agreement is supported. Emissions from electricity generation account for over 40% of South Africans' emissions. It is therefore makes sense that the emissions from this sector are drastically reduced. SARIC, however, believes that the best instrument to reduce emissions is this sector and through the IRP 2018. However, the IRP 2018 states it does not count for the externalized cost of carbon emissions. That CO2 emissions constraints imposed during the technical modeling indirectly imposes the cost of CO2 from electricity generation. The IRP externalities are only for emissions from air to power station stacks. They do not take into account the pollution of the water, the land from coal stockpiles, the ash heaps, and the acid deposition. Comment excerpts from SARIC members. SARIC's first member to comment is STASA, which is the Solar Thermal Association of South Africa. The assumptions in the IRP has led to the output table 7 in the draft IRP that suggests key technologies to be procured in South Africa. The assumptions are not exhaustive as such. The IRP must have clear stated intentions that energy be procured to meet certain key aspects. Clean, green energy, our international emissions reduction target commitments, grid stability, economic growth stability, and the NDP requirements. The exception that some technologies in the table are proxies for other technologies does not make sense and destroys investor confidence. In the IRP, the following was not considered. The learning curves for CSP to date, based on the South Africa international markets. CSP that can be procured in the baseload program and the mid-merit program as peaker, and as such have different technology design options. Only one plant design was considered for the overnight costs. The DOE to please factor the grid stability into the modeling in three key areas of low demand: baseload technology options, mid-merit technology options, and peaking technology options. STASA further comments, energy cannot be procured based only on LCOE, but DOE must procure the energy needed during these key load profiles to ensure grid remains stable and to meet the greater government requirements in the NDP and the international emissions commitments. CSP is being disadvantaged as overnight costs exclude the fuel and emission costs, for which the CSP technologies have a great advantage, no associated costs. Some key points from the consensus statement are, CSP with integrated thermal storage provides locally resourced, dispatchable and flexible energy electricity that complements other variables. The price of CSP electricity is coming down globally and could reach 90 cents per kilowatt by 2030. Similar cost reductions could be expected in South Africa with sufficiently large allocation in the IRP procurement methodology, which is critical. The current cost assumptions for CSP in the IRP modeling is not aligned with the actual price in the IRP bid window for expedited round, and CSP must be modeled as a flexible energy generator, as in the case of most other system dispatch technologies of OCGT and DCGT, etc., to capture the full value it can provide to the SA power system. Safia, you had the representation now. The key thought is, despite the renewable energy industry's contribution to the South African economy since its commencement in 2012, their sector has experienced a destructive start-stop progression in its short history. It has not been an issue of policy. It's been an issue of implementation. Unfortunately, it has seen local development and manufacturing companies that have borne the brunt of these delays. At least 4 solar PV manufacturing plants in South Africa have opened and closed its doors over the last 5 years, and many electronics component factories have shut down lines during the delays in the close of the REIPPPP Round 4. International IPP companies who operate in multiple jurisdictions have been able to redirect human and financial capital to other countries who have been able to provide greater policy commitments on the energy transition plans. These delays could be put into context of rapid global deployment of both solar and wind. Currently, the IRP 2018 does not anticipate new awards of solar and wind being deployed to the grid until 2025. SAFIA on the small-scale embedded generation category 1 to 10 megawatts. As the industry digitalizes and distributed energy generation becomes matter of course, municipal business models need to accommodate the disruptors and that compromise energy and explore new revenue streams. in the transformation from traditional fossil fuels to the renewable energy sources. Global energy transition has led this and created an opportunity for private sector participation beyond the current supply industry model. It's an energy evolution that has stimulated economic activities in the manufacturing and the sales of renewable energy projects. Commercial and residential customers are now able to realize huge energy savings from monthly bills. This is achieved by installing equipment driven by renewable energy sources. On the other hand, it must encourage new innovative ideas in the manner of how electricity distributors, Eskom and the municipalities service their customers. In South Africa, the situation is unique due to the socioeconomic and cultural factors that need to be taken into consideration. We believe partnerships between utilities, individual customers, and private businesses reduce the impact of electricity costs and enhance job opportunities. Security of supply for municipalities through renewable energy sources is key to the industry growth. SAFIA at a municipal level, while the most obvious benefit of private renewable energy investor optimizing self-consumption on a privately owned renewable energy system has already been detailed, what is perhaps not as obvious is the concept of scaling this up to a municipality or citywide level. Should the updated IRP make an allocation for municipal owned or municipally contracted renewable energy connected directly to the grid, then the ability to make a portion of that energy dispatchable will be of significant benefit to municipalities to reduce the cross-subsidy now required for the low-income residential sector. SSEG renewables, coupled with storage, will alleviate the expensive ramp rate issues and the inevitable duck curves that will develop in South Africa as more and more photovoltaic generation is connected to the grid. This must be factored into the IRP. SAYISA Energy Storage Association, very limited. I gave the presentation earlier. The investment opportunities by linking storage assets not only to Eskom distribution networks that need strengthening, but also municipal networks that are even in a worse state, thereby utilizing these assets to the greater benefit of the country. While we do not have detailed knowledge of the input parameters nor the boundary used for the current IRP modding, SAYISA's concern is that distributed energy storage may be significantly undervalued if the benefits, particularly for non-Eskom distribution industry, have not been properly factored in. SAWEA, South African Wind and Energy Association, comments delivered. The IRP provides a crucial opportunity for government to demonstrate its climate change commitment sooner rather than later, specifically bringing forward investment in renewable energy while phasing out costly to maintain old coal-fired power stations. And not investing in further coal-fired power stations will assist South Africa to achieve lower range of its 2030 NDC targets. Achieving this lower range target is becoming more critical in the light of the findings of the recently published IPCC report. The draft IRP update does not adequately recognize the costs associated with continued maintenance and investments in coal-fired power, while appearing to delay investment in cost-effective renewable power. Wind energy costs are significantly lower than the cost of implementing new coal generation, and as such, wind energy presents an affordable, climate-friendly opportunity for Eskom and for the South African economy. In recent years, the REAP program was by far the largest source of foreign direct investment in South Africa. Constraining investments in renewables can result in severe negative consequences for the society, the environment, and the economy. A three-year procurement gap on top of recent long delays in finalizing the Round 4 projects is not supportive of the achievement of government's economic objectives in attracting investments and creating local industries that support the creation of employment. The widely successful Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers Procurement Program has non-negotiable economic development requirements, such as aggressive local content targets, which rely on the continued growth of local manufacturing capabilities and a service and network supplier network. In the REAP Round 4, the local commitments for wind and energy range from between 45% and 65%. Continued and consistent growth of utility-scale wind industry is particularly critical given its potential to attract further investment, create significant number of jobs, provide wide-ranging social and environmental benefits, while continuing to provide extremely low-cost electricity. SAWEA's recommendation and proposal is to smooth out the wind and the PV procurement. SAWEA understands that in the short term, Eskom's liquidity is linked to a technical supply surplus due to declining demand and Eskom's own bill commitments. We therefore propose the following steps to directly address this challenge. Point number one, recognize the fact, rather than just being viewed as a threat to Eskom, low-cost renewables now present a game-changing opportunity for Eskom as a single buyer and thus also for South Africa. Point number two, in order to address growing coal supply and power station emission constraints, Eskom could urgently displace its most expensive and aging coal-fired power plants with competitively procured wind energy and other renewables in order to save costs and reduce risk to security of supply. Point number three, by supporting the decommissioning of coal plants, curtailing the construction of new coal capacity, and by establishing a continuous build program of competitively procured wind and other renewables, the IRP will enable Eskom, as the current single buyer, to capture the benefits of ongoing price reductions in wind energy generation below the cost of both new and much existing coal power, which will assist with addressing Eskom's current financial crisis. This will require a complete paradigm change in order to adjust the fundamental technology disruption in the industry and to ensure that Eskom and that South Africa can capture the maximum benefits that will arise therefrom. The REP update should be adjusted to smooth out the procurement of wind energy and so that the market risks associated with the stop-start procurement can be minimized. SAREC is a whole summary of the value of renewable energy to the SA industry. Potential policy adjustments. Renewable energy infrastructure in declining mine regions. This is the biggest motivation that we have from a PV and from a WEN perspective. Deploy the new energy infrastructure where the old energy infrastructure will ramp down. Retake and take over the soft gradually. Effect might not even increase overall costs because higher tariffs might be compensated by the reduced grid integration costs will make the socio-economic transition much easier. The renewable energy has the ability to be located anywhere in the geographics of South Africa. Flexible domestic technologies, CSP, biogas, pumped hydro, and batteries to be included. For all of them, must be dispatched by the system operator, must be flexible, intraday, interweek flexibility with regards to energy provision. Implementation, capacity payments for reliable available capacity, energy payments for fuel, if any. Effect, further reduction of already low gas imports lease costs, potential for skilled jobs in the agri-energy sector. Embracing the transition. Ramp down the existing coal fleet in a controlled manner. No capital spends on the existing coal fleets, but rather use the money to build new optimal mixes. Instead, the effect, carbon emissions can go down very quickly. South Africa leads the Africa in transition from the front. South Africa will be the low-cost, low-carbon energy hub. Solar, PV, wind and flexible generators, e.g. gas, CSP, hydro, biogas, demand response, batteries and fuel cells are the cheapest new bold mix for South African power systems from a pure cost perspective. No new coal, no new nuclear, any deviation from that would require subsidies. In conclusion, as an association, SAREC values the opportunity to give its comments here today and contribute to improving the country's energy system. We believe in the just energy transition, and we believe in the energy transformation. We support an IRP for an electricity that is rational, mechanistic, techno-economic planning process that determines the optimal mix of generation technologies and capacities at the least cost to the economy necessary to meet the projected demand for electricity in the years ahead, with adequate security and supply, while also meeting government's policy and socio-economic requirements and constraints. Such constraints may include meeting the carbon emissions reductions, applicable environment laws, regulations, policies, water usage, maximum of job creation, and most of all, driving localization for the country. So, thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks very much. The next presentation is that's why that mic doesn't want
to. You can stop.
Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity. My name is Knox Musebenzi, representing Nuclear Industry Association of South Africa, NIASA. I'm with a colleague here, Professor Anton Encelia, at the Wits University. By just way of introduction, the position that we'll be forwarding here today is really based on wide consultation within the industry. What we did was we initially asked Anthony to draft a response, having critically looked at the IRP. We then invited key stakeholders in the nuclear industry and outside of the nuclear industry to make a contribution, and then we workshopped the whole document together. So what you're going to see here is the culmination of a lot of consultation that took place. Just to kick off, we're coming from the premise that says we believe as the NIASA in an energy mix, as has been the position of the Department of Energy all along. And by energy mix, we mean all the technologies available in South Africa should be pursued. The only conversation that we should be having is how much of each. With those few words, I hand you over to Anthony.
Thank you very much, Knox. Honorable members and interested parties, my name is Anthony Solier. I'm the regional coordinator for AFRANEST, as well as the national coordinator of the South African Network for Nuclear Education, Science and Technology. So we looked at the IRP, and I'm going to speak directly at the IRP today, but I also hope in this discussion that I will challenge your conceptions a little bit today and also bring you maybe a story of hope moving into the future for South Africa. What we did is we looked at the IRP and we decided to at the first, in a scientific way, say what is this foundation that it's built on, what is it trying to achieve, where do we agree, and where do we find areas that we might not agree with, or where we can find areas that we could improve on. We also tested the basis of the calculations that was done, and I will present a little bit of everything to you, but we also hope that we can make contributions that can actually improve on the IRP, because I think everyone here is ultimately interested in getting the best possible integrated resource plan for this country over the next couple of decades. So first of all, the basis of the IRP 2018, it says in the formulation of its vision for the energy sector, the NDP took as point of departure the Integrated Resource Plan 2010 to 2030, which was promulgated in March 2011. The IRP is an electricity infrastructure development plan on least cost supply and demand balance, taking into account security of supply and the environment, minimizing negative emissions and water usage. The question now is, do we agree with that? I'm going to make a statement here, and moving forward, this statement will we will have to accept the IRP as it is today. The energy sector vision is based on supporting the National Development Plan developed to achieve a level of 7% economic growth. It would be rational to expect the final IRP to assume successful implementation of the NDP in its economic growth targets. In the same way, it would be irrational to develop an IRP based on the NDP vision and assuming that it will not be implemented or achieved, as it seems to be the case with the lower growth trajectories assumed in the IRP 2018. I will not comment on these growth trajectories, whether they are good or bad. I think there should just be policy alignment in terms of different plans looking into the future, aligning them together so that the one is not working against the other. Next we see comments were mostly advocating for a least cost plan. These are comments that came in from the IRP 2016, and the IRP 2018 was based on that. And it says mainly based on the renewable energy and gas in accordance with the scenario presented by the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. The question here is, do we agree with that? This seems to reveal a conflict from the authors. A least cost plan should be technology neutral. Assuming a least cost plan based on renewable energy would require a policy adjustment. So you could either say we have a policy of renewable energy, or we have a policy of least cost, but you cannot start a document or a study off with both. Although not mutually exclusive, that this does not imply that it is mutually inclusive, this least cost plan as well as this renewable plan. So that is quite problematic. Although the outcome might not change, this very statement that the document starts with really creates a conflict of interest in this study. Least cost plan can only be implemented with all costs of the economy being available as per the recommendation in the draft to Integrated Resource Plan 2018 for further studies. These costs are not available at the moment. And I'm going on here where we say the term least cost is used on 15 pages within the draft IRP document, and on those pages it appears numerous times. However, this term is not defined in the document itself. As a result, the methodology to achieve the least cost plan cannot be evaluated. Least cost is defined by the semantic scholar as least cost planning methodology, also referred to as least cost planning. It's a relatively new technique used by economists for making rational decisions about investments in transport and other urban infrastructure projects. It is based on a cost-benefit analysis. It is clear that the methodology applied in the draft IRP 2018 does not meet the criteria for least cost planning. It is not based on a cost-benefit analysis at all. All the recommendations for further detailed studies, as described in page 38, are required to determine the benefits and full costs of each technology. And those costs we are talking about is the cost to the economy. We cannot have a least cost scenario if we do not include the cost to the economy. And that even includes money flowing out of the country and money flowing into the country. As we see with the current IPP bid windows 1 to 4 and investments in South Africa as well as investments from outside, that more money will flow out of the country or out of the economy than is flowing in. So this is rather problematic because that does not consist of a least cost plan. It appears that the developers of the least cost utilize a cheapest plan rather than a least net cost plan to the economy as it is defined by the utilities industry. So I think it should be defined and implemented in as it is defined. Test assumptions and calculations. When we talk about intermittent renewable energy, the IRP update includes the cost as contained in the EPRI report, except for the following technologies: PV, wind, coal, and sugar bagasse, for which average actual cost achieved by the South African IPP was used. And I've got a little picture on the slide here of these costs. Fully indexed pricing implies the cost will increase annually with inflation. Inflation rate of 5% is assumed in our calculations, and a lifetime of 20 years is assumed for wind and 25 years for solar PV is assumed. In other words, this means that the R2.22 average price that Eskom is paying today to the IPPs per kilowatt hour will increase every year with inflation of 5% assumed, and that will continue to increase. That means, in real terms, it will remain flat, but that is not the case when we look at large build projects, which has got a very big portion of capital that is owned. We could go further. They say some technology costs, such as coal, nuclear, and concentrated solar CSP, showed much higher cost in 2017 relative to the assumed values in the promulgated IRP 2010 to 2030. That was mainly due to the higher exchange rate in 2017, which has impacted all technologies with the exception of some of the RE technologies as a result of a learning-related reduction cost experienced over the last few years. It does not seem to be including any learning rates for mega projects, which is actually a feature of mega projects, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. I have to draw your attention to Figure 6, Technology Overnight Capital Cost in January 2017, probably the most important figure in the document because all costs are based on that. It quotes overnight cost in rand per kilowatt hour on the left-hand axis. This is incorrect, and I think it's not a small typing error, and it also questions how many other mistakes are being made in this regard. And this needs to be corrected because this cost should be reflected in rand per kilowatt, not kilowatt hour. Then I would like to show you a little model. So for the benefit of people who can't see the the slides on there. This represents the calculation of the nuclear levelized cost of electricity based on the IRP 2018 assumptions. In other words, it uses a social discount rate of 8.2%, a duration loan of 60 years, or the duration of the lifetime of 60 years, a load factor of 90%, a capacity in this case of 1,400 megawatts, and a cost per kilowatt of 69,646.05. What happens then, and also we have this interest during construction included, where we have in year one 15%, 15%, 25%, 25%, 10%, 10% over the 5 years of the construction period. If you include all of that for the first unit, you get to a LCOE of 1.18 per kilowatt hour. But what is interesting is that this price, only the O&M and fuel cost will increase with inflation over time. And this is very important when we start analyzing these costs. That is about 20% of the cost. The capital cost, as it is being paid over the 60-year period, does not increase with inflation over time. It stays fixed in nominal terms, which means it actually decreases with inflation over time. Looking at that, you can see the figure on the graph there, and I placed a first unit construction build on that graph for 2031, just as a hypothetical scenario. That means that unit will actually cost 1.18 per kilowatt hour, but that cost will come down over time. It will catch up with inflation, in other words. So as inflation continues to grow, money grows with 5%, the cost of nuclear over time only increases with 1%, because it's only the O&M and fuel cost that is growing. And that is a very big difference from the fully indexed pricing that is used by the IPP office. You can see also that we've included, and this is something that we request, a learning rate, and you'll see on the graph on the left-hand side at the bottom, you can see the learning curves. This is based on the learning curve achieved by number one, Coburg. The Coburg Unit 2, when it was built, was 88% of Unit 1. So the cost actually reduces quite significantly. We have also have evidence where Arriva provided information to South Africa in 2008 when we were in a bidding process between Arriva and Westinghouse, and that is a similar, it's also on this curve, where Unit 1 would have 100% of the cost and Unit 2 would come down to about 90% of the cost. This continues to come down, and this is a feature of mega projects. So over time, you hit around, well, at unit 6 or 7, you hit around a plateau of about 75% the cost of the original unit. We also see this evidence in the Asian countries where they've been constructing for quite some time, and they get the costs of nuclear build down from starting at around $5,000 per kilowatt down to around $3,000 and even lower than that the more units they build. And that is a feature of an economy that built mega projects. It's an absolute feature of that. So you can see I've also added hypothetical new units of plants 2 years apart, and you can see they actually start at a lower base price. So the second one starts at around 1.08, the third one starts at about 1.03, and it comes down, and I put just 5 units in based on the scenario 7 in the IRP 2018. But you can also see on that same graph the tariff structure is increasing over time in this real projected tariffs. So this actually shows you that instead of the assumption that this cost of nuclear will stay flat over time, it actually over time decreases. This leaves you with two wonderful opportunities. The one is the problem that we have with stranded assets. If this cost reduction over time actually is faster than the cost reduction of other technologies over time, you are guarded against a stranded asset. And as you can see, that cost goes down over time to by 2050. The cost per kilowatt hour in 2018 rands will be around 50 cents per kilowatt hour. So it will be the equivalent of 50 cents out of your pocket per kilowatt hour today by the time 2050. And that actually runs down to around 20 cents at the lifetime of the plant. The plant will last until 2090. The other benefit that this allows is it also mitigates the risk of overbuilding capacity. Because as this cost is reduced over time, having overcapacity available allows the economy to incentivize industries with energy. So if you have, if this cost comes down of energy, you can actually get more in the industries that will actually construct and use this energy. And that is something that we see today. We can see the Coburg nuclear power plants producing the cheapest electricity in the country, and it's got no risk of becoming a stranded asset because the cost is simply too low. Then treating the cost of energy over time, it says the projected unit of cost of electricity by 2030 is similar for all scenarios except for the market-linked gas prices. In the case of market-linked increase in gas prices was assumed instead of inflation-based increases. So it's important to look at this inflation-based increase because it's only the O&M and fuel that will increase with inflation, nothing else in any large capital project, so that includes the coal build as well. So this is actually mathematically incorrect. It's only the REIPP program that uses inflation index pricing. Calculation of LCE of other energy sources, the total cost will not increase with inflation as the capital cost is spread evenly over time. Only the operations, maintenance, and fuel costs will increase with inflation. For nuclear power, this makes less than 20% of the LCOE costs. And that's about 21 cents of the total unit that will increase with inflation. The rest will remain constant over time. I want to add also that the only way to get through reflective costing is to issue, as was the plan in the IRP 2010, a request for proposals. That is the only way to have reflective cost tariffs. If we look at the EPRI report, we can see that over time the cost for wind and solar actually increased, but it did not increase based on the bid window prices. So if we would go out on a competitive bidding process, we could assume that we would also see those cost reductions. This gives you a bit of a picture of actually how these costs are compared. So you can see the dark blue line on the graph is the nuclear one lasting 60 years, and you can see the cost actually increases much slower than that of the REIPP bid window prices, because they increase with inflation every year, and you can see that by year, around year, I think it's around year 12, and this is actually, by around year 12, nuclear becomes cheaper than solar. And by around year 18, the nuclear becomes cheaper than wind in terms of its kilowatt-hour price. And this is nominal prices. You can see actually it goes up quite high. So by 2090, we'll be paying around 5.50 per kilowatt-hour. But that's equivalent to about 20 cents in today's money. And here you can see actually the cumulative costs, because obviously if you pay more at the beginning, this actually needs to be paid off before you can actually start recovering that cost. So we see there the cumulative cost that you need to recover with this reduction in price. Actually, at around year 19, nuclear cumulatively becomes cheaper than solar, and at around year 28, nuclear becomes cumulatively cheaper than wind based on the cost that was in the IRP 2018. What is unfortunate is that the wind will be decommissioned by 25 years, so it won't really last that long. Applied policy adjustment and consideration in the final proposed plan, so this is something else. The inclusion of the 2,500 megawatt of hydropower in 2030 to facilitate the RSA-DRC treaty in the Inga hydropower project, in line with South Africa's commitments contained in the NDP to partner with regional neighbours. The project has the potential to energize and unlock regional industrialization. We fully support the support of the South African power pool, and we believe that this is very important. However, with the associated risk of the 2,500 megawatt hydro RSA DRC project and the uncertainty in cost, it seems irrational to include this in the pre-2030 plan. This is something that is out of our control. Although we very much support this and we should continue to support this, we believe that should be moved to the post-2030 plan, and this should be replaced in the pre-2030 plan with a similar technology, low emissions, dispatchable supply. Just looking at a few other things, the RP 2018 proposes the following new, not committed yet, additional capacity up to 2030, and I think everyone is familiar with that. 1,000 megawatt of coal, 2,000 megawatt of hydro, solar, PV, wind, and gas diesel with a total peak capacity of about 25,370 megawatt. With the solar, PV, and wind capacity factors, as well as the gas diesel capacity factor, you would need a wind solar gas combination replacement for nuclear. Again, this is a hypothetical situation. The wind solar gas combination up to 2030 will cost you around 303 billion rand up from now until 2030. If you would replace that with an equivalent nuclear power based on all the same costs as in the RP 2018, this will result in 354 billion rand. So it's about a 50 billion rand more expensive for the nuclear power equivalent. But we have to remember that the nuclear power plant will last for 60 years versus the 20 years of the wind-solar gas combination. In other words, you have to recapitalize that entire capacity twice after you've built it. And just also with what is interesting is that with the 5% load factor on the gas turbines, the cost of nuclear fuel is so much cheaper is that the fuel cost of nuclear will be less than the fuel cost of that wind-solar gas combination. And these are all using the same assumptions and cost as in the RP 2018. So this is nothing different. It's simply the cost. But now we could also look at, and the RP 2018 actually requests more studies to be done on financial models. Now, financial models has a very large implication on what you actually pay for it, because we don't expect that the full amount will be funded by Treasury or Eskom, whoever will be doing it. We will go out into the market and we will see what is possible to achieve. If we go and look at what has been achieved worldwide at the moment, we see a typical scenario of a vendor loan over 20 years, and this is important, not over 60 years, it's over 20 years at an interest rate of 3%, okay? And that will be about 85% of your capital cost. So you'll pay all the whole amount off earlier, and after that, the only cost that you will have is O&M and fuel costs. Then the other 15% can actually be built into a public-private partnership, similar to what the IPP program has been doing. So the other 15% you can finance at a higher rate, and in this case we use the social discount rate of 8.2%, but you could even go higher than that. So if you have this combined capital cost, you see the cost of a kilowatt hour in nuclear coming down from the original 1.80 to 94 cents. And this is all with the same assumptions, same cost assumptions used in the IRP 2018. The only difference is we have a built-in a financing model which the IRP 2018 actually is asking for. So this is a real financing model that is found all over the world. We also then built in the learning curves as we have seen that it's been achieved worldwide. So then you see the price coming down, starting at 94 cents, and it ends up at about 20 cents equivalent per kilowatt hour. This is simply because you pay off the asset over 20 years, and after that, for the remaining 40 years, the only cost that you'll be paying is the cost of O&M and fuel. So it's a wonderful opportunity for a country looking forward into the future and actually achieving economic growth based on the electricity sector that can provide that. The IRP 2018 also asked for more studies to be done on the economic impact of nuclear programs. So we've decided to provide some of this information because this information and the studies has been done. It's not something that's not been done. So here you can see, this is on the graph, you can see a map of South Africa, and you can see because Coburg is based in the Western Cape, most of the economic impact takes place in the Western Cape. This is not a model that has been done by a scientist. This is factually based. This is for the year 2015-2016 capital expenses and day-to-day operations. So it's important to note this is for an operational plant. It is not the construction phase. The construction phase obviously has a much larger impact because of the construction. So to start off with, in the Western Cape, the Coburg Nuclear Power Plant employs directly about 1,786 people, and that, as well as indirectly, about 7,702 people, and it also induces another 9,589 jobs in the Western Cape. That totals to directly impacting 19,086 jobs in the Western Cape, and if you go nationally to the rest of the country, you see another 16,647 jobs that's being created just by the operations of the Coburg Nuclear Power Plant. And again, this is not a model, this is real data from the operations of the nuclear power plant. You could also go and you can see that the Coburg Nuclear Power Plant contribution to the Western Cape GDP is 1.5%. This is not insignificant. It's around 30.2 billion rand over 2 years. And if you look at that over the rest of the country, you can see it's about 0.2% of the country's GDP is the Coburg Nuclear Power Plant and contributes about 23.1 billion rand to the GDP of the country. So this is really important when we look at least cost scenarios, because this is money that stays in this economy. It's a contribution to the economy. In fact, for every 1 rand that is spent on the nuclear Coburg power plant, it produces 1.30 rand in the economy of South Africa, which is not insignificant. That figure, during a new build process, that figure rises to about 3 rand per kilowatt hour for every 1 rand spent. So this is, you could say, it is a negative cost impact instead of a positive cost impact, although that sounds a little bit negative. You could also have a look at this and see that 16.4 billion is the total impact on the national fiscus from Coburg. So that is also not insignificant. So moving on to the findings, the draft 2018 Integrated Resource Plan 2018 attempts to provide a number of least cost planning scenarios based on various growth paths and policy adjustments for South Africa. Generally, the plan fails to meet the least cost planning objective as it ignores all costs associated with the socioeconomics of various options, as well as the transition costs, because this is also a cost impact. It does not judge all energy sources on the same merit. It does not even attempt to do that. Rather than being technology neutral, it appears the plan has been developed with certain policy outcomes in mind, with the least cost planning method used as a tool to achieve this. The least cost outcome it proposes, however, has been internationally demonstrated to be uncertain, expensive, and in most cases, ineffective in achieving its primary goals, primarily that of decarbonizing the electricity sector. There are no country in the world today that has significantly reduced its carbon emissions using a combination of wind, solar, and gas, as is described in this. There is no country that has done that. Germany is probably the closest country that we can use. It has an installed base of 110 gigawatts of solar and wind in a grid that requires, at peak, 80 gigawatts. Its carbon emissions is sitting around 500 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour. The country bordering it, which is 80% nuclear, has 10 times less carbon emissions. The carbon emissions sitting at 50 grams per kilowatt hour. Obviously, it fluctuates for both. So, France. Oh, I didn't mention, that's France. Okay. If you're lucky, you can go to Norway and you can run your whole country on hydro. And you can completely decarbonize your grid running on hydro. Unfortunately, we don't have that luxury in South Africa. It is notable that in-depth research, in particular on the socioeconomic impact of nuclear programs, has been conducted, such as the economic impact of the Coburg Nuclear Power Station, March 2017, that was done by Eskom, the economic benefits of the nuclear build for the Eastern Cape, that was done by the Kuga Development Corporation. And the authors of the draft 2018 Integrated Resource Plan are seemingly unaware of these studies. And it's actually quite broad. The draft Integrated Resource Plan 2018 does not compare costs between various technologies on an even playing field. Fully indexed power purchase agreement prices for wind and solar, calculated costs discounted over time for nuclear and other energy sources. This needs to be corrected. Most importantly, a request for proposals from nuclear vendors, and I'm mentioning nuclear here because we are from NEASA, but it includes that for all energy sources that we have uncertainty on cost, should be issued to determine the correct costs for nuclear. The draft integrated resource plan should be redrafted to incorporate the information that the authors were previously unaware of, the correct and full definition of least cost analysis, and it should treat costing of energy sources equally in over a period of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who's next? Oh, the Nuclear Professionals Society, the young ones, and SARPA. Where is Professor Wilson? He's not in the room. Okay. Welcome. You can start.
Oh. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Ladies and gentlemen. On my far left there, we've got the Deputy Chairperson of the South African Young Nuclear Professionals Society, Mr. Israel Sekoko, a nuclear scientist by profession, very young and very far from retirement. My name is Timothy Sibela, the Secretary General of the South African Radiation Protection Association, SARPA. And in the middle, our chairperson, who's going to take us through the presentations, Mr. Haupalele Santswiri. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members, the House at large. I'm also a registered professional nuclear physicist by profession with over a decade of experience. So what we want to say here at Synapse is that
the DG looks very envious.
Now, Chair, I was wondering, how's the definition of a young nuclear physicist in terms of age?
Well, if you feel young, you are young. So we are still young, and we feel so. So we also did our bit to review the integrated resource plan, and we strongly feel that, you know, we had to come here and air our views. Just to also make mention, we've been currently involved for quite a long time with the National Plan Commission through their studies on energy since the beginning, and we've also been trying to put our comments on that, but it clearly looks like they could not see themselves through. I think about a century ago, one of the most strategic things that Winston Churchill did, although we were not able to see him in person, but we strongly believe in what he said, in that safety and certainty, when he was looking into the oil industry by then, lie in variety and variety alone. And we strongly believe that South Africa has some of the resources that we should look into and start to see how best can we benefit from it. Yesterday, there was a policy uncertainty which was brought to the fore, even today, that we seem not to have policy certainty. And as SANAPS, we strongly believe that You know, there's a policy sitting in the department since 2008 that the nuclear energy policy, that we need to beneficiate from mining, milling, conversion, fabrication, and so forth. And looking at the history of Nexa at one point, that Nexa was beneficiating from that, and we strongly believe that we've got capability to go back. But we look into the IRP, it does not advocate those policies, and to our surprise is that a plan does not direct a policy, but a policy directs a plan. So when you look at the plan, the IRP, it looks to leave some of those policies behind. And also to mention, I know we look at the National Water Resource Strategy of 2018, which has been approved, by the way, which says that if you look, go to Annex C of it, it says that by 2030, 10% of urban water usage must be from desalination because our level of rainfall is very low. We're a water-scarce country. So when you look at the IRP, we said, why is the IRP not addressing those issues? Was there not a potential of stakeholder engagement to engage some of those strategies, some of those plans, to look at it to say that as a water-scarce country, how are we going to resolve it? Although I know there was a hype of day zero, which is now moving from Cape to as far as KZN. So we're asking that is the energy or the plan of the energy not also going to look into that to say that water and energy, you cannot divorce one from the other. They go as a collective because when you deploy energy, you must take into consideration water. Now, the challenge today is how to balance energy security, the inclusive growth where the majority of the population must be into the economy, the issue of employment, and also the issues of the climate change has to be centered into the energy plan or into the IRP. They have to be central. So getting the policy mix right is the correct way to avoid the traps of complacency and also panic that was created in 2007 and 2008. So we need to avoid that. So we're saying that as the young professionals, we strongly believe that when you look into the plan, some of these issues were properly not looked into. So this is just to say that these are the issues that we're going to look into, but it's also customary, you know, societally, so that you need to introduce yourself as who you are. We've been around since 2002. We are not born yesterday. So we've been involved. We are also affiliated to the International Nuclear Youth Congress, and we also have operated within the auspices of the International Atomic Energy Agency. So hence I'm saying that with the National Planning Commission, we've been involved for quite a long time. We've got members across the board, all the industry. He's from Eskom. He works here at Quebec, which supplies half of your electricity. He's very conversant of what is the development at Quebec. And he was also instrumental in the siting of the new build, as you have seen that we've got the authorization for Denifontein to expand the nuclear build. I also work for our state-owned cities. And then we've got different of our members. I mean, we comprise of 350 plus. And also at universities, because universities have programs that are well developed. You know, the current CEO of NNR, if it was not for the nuclear-related or the problem, the program that was introduced in 1998 in Northwest University of Mafikeng, which is called the Center for Applied Radiation Science and Technology, I strongly believe that he would have entered into a market. So that clearly shows that that center and also others were there to take the majority into the space which were not there. So when you look at the IRP and what the direction is taking, is that it's taking the regressive direction to close the industry, which I strongly believe that it acts against what the universities and the industry have invested until today. So what is our role? Is to educate the public, because the public don't understand what is nuclear. And nuclear applications are going as far as beyond only power. I mean, as we look at desalination, it's a potential that the country can do. We look at Nexa, which is the biggest in terms of nuclear medicine. And not only that, I mean, you go to Steve Biko, without Nexa producing those pharmaceuticals, I mean, Steve Biko is suffering. So we need to look at those things. We need to encourage STEM. You know, learn us to focus on STEM. When you look at Asian countries, they focus a lot of their economy on the STEM. Hence, most of us here, we have cell phones that come from East. That is how they encourage the economy. So we need to encourage learners also to focus on that. We also encourage university students to take research on that and also go international level to advocate for the role of nuclear and also advise the policymakers on how and what would be the best way of ensuring that the youth of this country play a significant role into the industry. So I think this is very, very important to understand that. Why was it very important for us to come here? Because the very same question that came was that members were asking that if we see that the nuclear is not considered, what is the thinking of the policymakers? Where do they expect us to go if they are closing the industry? That is a very, very strong point. The currently, we've got, let me just give you one of the stats. 12 graduates for March 2019 at Northwest University at master's level. We have 11 graduates at BSc level, at honors level, 2 graduates at PhD, at Potchefstroom, because Potchefstroom is focusing on engineering and Mafikeng is focusing on science. We've got 4 graduates from MSc level, 2 graduates in PhD. The UJ project was closed because of this, the uncertainty. We have about 13 graduates in postgraduate diploma in nuclear engineering. So what the thinking is that the industry seems to be shrinking. How are we going to encourage more participation in the nuclear space if nuclear is not considered? When you look at the trend that is encouraged in the IRP 2018, we have about 12 graduates abroad at master's level. Some are in China, some are in Korea, some are in Russia and all that. So what do they think when they see the IRP? I think as policymakers, we need to start thinking of that it's an industry that is existing. Instead of building on, we are thinking of closing it. And that is why we say that science dispels the myth. And I think if we go back to the definition of science, we'll understand why. So we want to start by saying that to support NDP 2030, to attract the very same people that we want, global investors, for a country that is developing in South Africa, the following must happen. There need to be robust infrastructure development, investor destinations, low production and manufacturing costs. If the cost of electricity is high, you are not going to find that. Sustainable jobs. For us as young professionals, we've got sustainable jobs. We understand the imperatives of having a sustainable job. The technology that supports GHG, I think we've been saying that, security of supply. We cannot, we have done a robust, we have engaged internationally to see how countries protect their energy security. You cannot, donate my fatherly responsibility to my neighbor. It's the same as energy. You cannot donate it. And we strongly believe that the IRP, the way it's constructed, is donating our energy security to our neighbors. 8,000 megawatts of gas. That's a lot of numbers. If you're going to retire 12,000 megawatts and put 8,000, you are donating. It's strictly like that. Skilled workforce, the nuclear industry, our membership base, you will never, the level of skills that is there, we've got a high number of postgraduates there, including myself, from master's to PhD level. What will happen to that skilled force? And this skilled force, because the way nuclear does it, you can deploy it to other industries. We are speaking about the fourth industrial revolution, which is going to have intermittency cannot give you a guarantee. If I wake up at 5 o'clock, I want to have electricity. I don't want to, what we're looking is that we're donating our energy security to weather. We don't have the control of the fuel source. The weather might decide not to have wind, like we've seen in the UK, 9 days of no wind. We've seen solar. Sometimes even in the country, you'll have a week of no sun. So what is that? You are donating that responsibility to the weather. You don't have a control. So we need to find a clarity as to why do we need so much of energy resource to that. What is energy system planning? I think we must get deeper to the context. Preparing for uncertain future in a complex, organized, and transparent manner. That's how energy planning should be. There are a lot of trade-offs to find the optimal allocation of the scarce sources of energy that we are finding, whether between energy and non-self. The longevity and the capital intensity of the infrastructure. For now, we hear arguments of smart grid, but the current grid that we have, it has a lot of problems. We need to upgrade it. A lot of money must go into that in order to ensure that. So the prerequisite for informed decision-making, we need to understand future demands, evaluate options, review different ways to meet those needs, identify risks and benefits. We need to explore what if, those are the questions that needs to be there. Investment requirements which include return. And this is where we'll come back to it. We've seen some of the energy models from different countries. One of the issues that they look into is the benefit to say that, do I want to take all of my money outside? Or do I have to save some that must rotate into my economy and improve? Compliance with policy constraints, testing the effective and feasibility of policy measures. So, what is energy modeling? What is it and what is not? We need to be very clear. Because IRP was based on energy model called PLESOS. Energy models create simplified images of real life energy systems by translating the essential components and structures and flow into traceable mathematical formulation. I think in the nuclear industry, we understand modeling because some of us, we also use modeling for the safety of a nuclear power plant, you know, deterministic safety analysis or your probabilistic one. I mean, some of our members here, they are currently been doing research at the PhD level on modeling. So modeling is subject to us. We understand it. So the equation represents a rule-based interaction between key energy system components and once calibrated to reflect the current energy system and base year energy flow, future technology and fuel or resource options, as well as demand projections, need to be added. We need to be forward-looking in terms of doing that by using scenarios. And we've looked at all the scenarios that are presented on IRP. Different agents require different answers, thus different models. There is no one-size-fits-all. And in scientific terms, you cannot use one solution and expect it to be the answer. You need to provide at least two or three of different, using the same assumption, so that you can test the accuracy of your model and also look into saying that you verify that this model at least can provide you with acceptable answers. Energy modeling is not it's not science, it's just an art of how you use those equations. So we need to differentiate them. The information models provided is often complex and needs to be interpreted or conditioned for decision makers because I strongly believe that you are here decision makers. So the model needs to be designed by different people and then they come and present the model to say, this is what we look at. So we need to be very, very careful. Energy modeling generates insight. It doesn't give you answers. It gives you insights to understand how real life might, you mimic real life. I don't know if we've got internet here. We don't have. Okay, I just wanted to show you the energy for Germany, because I have seen that in the discourse, a lot of people, they like to refer that. Showing you that you can get that model, you can just follow this, and then it will show you, even last week. And then you can look at the composition of it. Now, if you go to this, if you look at how they've managed to use all their resources that are available, I want to take you to the brown coal. They call that the lignite. The reason why they're using so much of lignite is because it's local as compared to the hard coal that they are importing. Are we not going to also look at what is local to us as a resource? And then look at it. As has been said, we've looked at the ingress or the deployment or the high penetration of solar. And when you look at it, because we went to this website just to see how does it go, you find that some of the times you don't find it, some of the times you find it. But because they've got base load, to support that system, it is possible for them. So are we going to remove the base load without supporting it with the base load on the instances that, no, there's going to be backed by gas? And by the way, 2 weeks ago, we were attending an energy planning seminar. One of the presenters from US showed us that the price of natural gas, the way it's so slow, is so low, it's going to push their emissions because it's a deregulated market with a lot of private people. So the issue is that everyone wants profit there. So they will push what is cheaper to them, but forgetting that there's a sort of an increase in emissions. So those are the issues that we need to also consider. That whereas in America, if they see that the price of gas might have an impact on their emissions, what is the impact of 8,100 megawatts if we don't have wind? Because at one stage, we'll have to back them. So those are the things that we really need to wait. This is the MAIMAR 2017 energy planning. And this is why we want to bring this is that if you look at this energy planning, it has goals: sustainable, reliable, and competitive. And look at the key indicators there. CO2 emissions, renewable in 2025, and so forth. I want you to take cognizance of the foreign fuel bill, because they are going to import some of the sources. So they're looking at that to say that that also must become a factor, because they don't want to find themselves spending all their money on foreign soil. What will drive the economy? Because you end up being a consumer. Is this the gospel that we want to travel to say that gas is not here? I mean, we've listened to argument that gas will come from somewhere. But here you will end up being a consumer. You are not into the economy of the gas. You are consuming what's produced somewhere else. As we have witnessed with the RE, that we become consumers of all those other things. I mean, we've heard that some of these things, when the door operates, you have to go back to the original equipment manufacturer and ask for that. So this is what we're saying, that we need to be very cognizant of drive. Where are we driving our economy? Are we want us to be consumers, or do we also want to participate into the technology side of it so that we can beneficiate as much as possible? And we strongly believe that more needs to be done in order to ensure that it is reflected into the IRP, as it currently not have. I just want to go back, as we put this slide, because when you go to kids at schools, they ask us, what is there in the nuclear space? And these are the issues, because there's power generation, there's Quebec, 1,700. In the 1,700, how many of those things are high-tech skills? What kind of skills are there? And one of the issues also we want to bring into the debate is that, what is the procurement spend of Quebec currently? I think we've seen that from the presentation. The procurement spend, you can use it to direct. How much of it can you use to stimulate participation? We had a Black Industrialist Program. Why are we not looking to say that if we expand, the Black Industrialist Program can beneficiate through the procurement spend of Quebec? So is Nexa. Because we should not only look at employment, but also look at what is the procurement spend that we can use also to expand our, what you call, the inclusive growth in order to have the majority also there. Medicine and so forth, including R&D. So these are some of the things that we have to present to say, you need environmentalists, because you need to understand the environment in order for you to say that, how can I put that? It's a highly regulated industry. I think we currently know that what has been happening currently. They said they halted NTP because NNR felt like safety was not. So if that is the case, are we not saying that we have confidence in our regulator? That should be very confident enough. With the support of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Nuclear, we've shown that it's there. It's providing base load. The carbon footprint is very small. And operation of 60 years. It's sad that we're still young. I think we can... How long can we operate? Yeah, I mean, me and you. I mean, we'll leave that power plant still operating if it was to be built by 20 days. That clearly says even my son can come. His son. So we need to look at that. That is a factor. I mean, a 20-year, I will leave it. It will be there. I will decommission it myself and bury it. A 60-year, I will leave it. Those are the things that we also need to take into consideration. IRP must not be about the cheapest. Sometimes when you look at it, you know, we are taking a taxi. There's a two version of Toyota Quantum. There's one they call CI. If you look at them, they are not of the same value. And you look at the durability of the two. There's a taxi called Inyat. Look at the durability. So we need to look at these things very careful. The durability of that. So we need to be very careful. Yes. So we need to look at diversity and security. Security of supply must be at the center. We cannot donate our security of supply. Never. High availability, I think this one has been said. We know that. I mean, we know nuclear can provide to 8,000 of more than 8,000 hours. Per year of electricity. We know. It's science. Solar, you get 1,000. It's there. Science is there. We cannot dispute science. I think we need also to be there. As much as we do these things, loss of nuclear skills is what this IRPC is driving. Where will I be? Where will our members be? If the IRP says that by 2030 we'll have 2%, and by so forth, until 2044 you don't have nuclear. I mean, next I will be left with what? Production of isotopes. I mean, from 1,000 whatsoever, 800, it will be left with how many people? We cannot all of us be producing nuclear medicine. Manufacturing, Nexa has a manufacturing capability. They need to enter, has the potential to go, to start conversion, enrichment, and fabrication. Egypt signed the contract very soon. Are we saying that we're not looking at supplying some of those services to the Egyptians? I think we need to be very conscious of our decision. Policy uncertainty has been spoken about. We want to lose our global position. We are sitting in a very strategic position here. Everyone must pass by us. I mean, it was started by 1652. Everyone must pass here. So what are we saying? Are we not going to build manufacturing capacity to ensure that we can diversify? We are sitting in a fork sort of. This is East. This is America. We can supply. This is why NTP flourishes, because of the center of NTP sitting there. It's much easier for you to transport. So we need to look at that. So we can emphasize more. Localization. You know, as the young nuclear professionals, because we go outside there to make our own research, we've been to South Korea. It was so, I don't want to say the word embarrassing, to see a 17,000 ton, you know, when they were busy doing it. It was done by young guys, you know. Some of them, we could see that they are of my age. You know, they were turning it. And then they said, 5 years we didn't have the skills. Today we have it. Is that not foreseeable for us? Are we not that visionary enough to say we also want to see that kind of opportunity? Us forging. Those are the things that we seriously. The contribution to science and technology. You know, last month, the Department of Science and Technology issued a white paper on science, technology, and innovation. We put our comments to say that nuclear is also centered there. Research and development. We need to find a way of saying that. How are we finding more and more of research and development? We need a complete nuclear fuel cycle to increase our personal skills. Supplier development is very central to us because we are not encouraging our members also to be employees. Some of our members, we have seen that they've got a potential of entrepreneurs. I don't know who knows Garabo, who is currently sitting at a prototype and also is a farmer. They have shown that there's a high level of entrepreneurship within that community. Seawater, we don't use normal municipality water. I mean, Quebec has shown they've now completely gone out of the municipality grid. How much of the municipality revenue are they losing? Because they used to also depend. Quebec was paying. I know some of us might take time to pay, but we'll pay. But Quebec was paying because they are operating. The land cannot not. Just a square kilometer. That's the footprint to get 1,000 of electricity from nuclear. You can see there. Because of the energy density. What is the density? We must also consider energy density, that the smaller footprint, you have more energy than when you have a larger sort of a footprint, like we've seen that some of these technologies are provided. There's always an issue that there's going to be disruptive technologies and offer. We cannot commit ourselves. There's always going to be supply needed if you're driving the economy. So there's no way where at a certain age, 2040, you're not going to need electricity. Because you said it's disruptive. How are we going to support the fourth industrialist that is energy intensive? So we don't see a scenario that will have stranded asset. I think it's a quaint English term that I find very, okay, I will not go there. In conclusion, we strongly believe that addition of nuclear must be there. 2 mega projects that are currently being built, soon they'll be completed by 2022. There's a high skill that has been developed there. We must consider that. What happens to that labor? Are we going to wait again for another 20 years and then go and reskill people and then you have cost overrun? Is the learning of Midutu and Kusile not enough for us to continue with mega projects to ensure that when we replace the 12,000 megawatts, let's have mega projects also to have those kind of labor that we have skilled to contribute to the economy continuously? Natural gas is imported, and the price cannot be guaranteed. The cost of gas will be passed to us again. We have seen the terms that have been quoted. They said the cost of RE are neutral to Eskom balance sheet. It's a pass-through model. What is a pass-through model? It means I have to continue paying more because Eskom is not taking the liability. So we need to be very cautious. We cannot control the price of petrol. Now we are thinking of buying bicycle for 60 kilometers because we stay far from work. Financial, that is also must be considered, that the gas prices are in dollars, not desirable if I was from the science, from the senior point of view. Base load is necessary to stabilize the grid. I think one of the strategic thing was that Quebec was built because you could not transport coal from as far as Mpumalanga to Cape Town, so you needed to have something here to stabilize. So we need to look into those other issues. 60 years, I've said it, it's high cost, but we need to look at I will not say that we must invest on something that has a high return on investment. I think it's what investor confidence in our language means. Sustainable jobs, we've spoken about it. Look, we're going to emphasize this and emphasize it again. The cost that we've seen in April are cost that is EPR from the French and the AP1000 from the Americans. But funny enough, China is commissioned now two of those designs. We need to find a way to say that. Is the cost still the same like 10 years ago, as April suggests? We cannot. We need to take the very same process that we said the renewable process was taken through a competitive bidding process, hence the prices were down. Why can't we afford the same to analyze all the technology? So that you don't say that, no, it is based on a study. But the problem with a study is based on available information. As a competitor, I will not tell you how much I sell. I mean, it's basic economics. If I want to buy BM320 or C-Class, I'll go to both of them and I'll negotiate and then I'll see which one gives me the best price. You cannot sit and say, from Car Magazine, it says it costs this much, therefore the price is this. It does not make scientific sense. We need to be very, very cautious on these issues. I think we need to do that. So that is what we wanted to bring from the young nuclear professionals, as young as we are and very active as we are. We just want to show that this IRP planning must be, we need to go beyond what is there. Have different models being tested by different industries with the same assumption. Then we can say that at least the level of accuracy is acceptable to society. We can't use one. And by the way, we've seen that some of these models are commercial models. They are like a box. You don't know what is happening. You just put in, get out. And one of the issues from a science point of view, we want an open source so that we can interrogate the mathematics behind, so that we are all in the same context. I'm just going to take 2 minutes to do the last one, if it's allowed. Honorable. Okay, thank you. Now, I know you've got a very big heart. Yes, so very big heart. So this is just what we want to say, because these organizations are interrelated. When you talk of radiation protection, it's very key. One of the mandates of NNR, actually the most important mandate of the National Nuclear Regulator, is to ensure the safety of the workers, the public, and the environment. And you cannot do that without radiation protection. You need to understand what is radiation. You need to protect workers from radiation, because radiation is like a topology. You don't see it, but it will deal with you. It's the same concept. So that is radiation. I mean, you don't see it, you can't smell it. I've grown to this far to be Beyonce. I've always been told of a topology. I've never seen it, but I hear that the effects are very, very harmful. So this is a very well-established organization since 1997, because we need to have a body that looks after radiation protection, which is the objective, is to set the objective and the profession of radiation protection, not only in South Africa, in the entire SADC region, is to promote and further the science on application of radiation and the professional interest of persons engaged in the radiation. So currently, SARPA is affiliated to the International Radiation Protection Agency, which is a body which is also working closely with IAEA. So the reason why we wanted to call here is that SARPA has seen that our safety, because when we hear the argument is that nuclear is dangerous, but I ask myself, I always fly, and I know, I mean, the loss of engine there, it means I will be meeting my creator. But because of the safety records, we strongly say that there's a safety component. So nuclear is not also immune. I mean, there's a safety, clear safety record from NEXA, from UBEC, and the introduction now of the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute will take care of the waste. So the concept of it's not safe, it baffles us. So I say, what safety are you talking about? We've seen the reports from Fukushima, we've witnessed, even some of our members from South have participated on those scientific analysis to check what was the effect of radiation from Fukushima explosion. And we've seen that, I mean, PAL on its own, if you go to PAL, by the way, it's highly radioactive, but there are people living there. So this is what we're trying to look at that, to say that safety concern at Quebec, I mean, it's the best performing plant at ESCOM. Highly skilled them. The safety culture, you know, in the nuclear industry, there's something called culture, safety culture. You must understand that you must do something, because I don't have honorable, or I don't have the portfolio committee on energy looking at me to say if I do things the correct way. It is within you that if you don't do it correctly, the potential or the consequences of you causing the accident are catastrophic. So all these other things, modern technology have shown us that we are moving beyond to ensure that the plants are becoming more and more and more and more safe. I mean, South Africa, we are immune to catastrophes like tsunami and earthquake. Last week, when we attended the energy plane, we were in Chicago. We know we were so frightened because Hurricane Mike was passing by us, and we've seen that houses were flying. I mean, if a house can fly, you can imagine my body, which means wolf. So those are the things that we also need to consider, because those are considered when some of these things are done. The spent fuel, I mean, Quebec is still dealing. The spent fuel at Quebec for the past 8 years is not even more than half of the tennis court. I mean, for someone who plays tennis, they will know how this, the half of the tennis court is very small. You know, those are the issues. Emergency preparedness, I mean, we've seen that. We attend public safety forums and so forth. I think the exclusion of nuclear is not only detrimental to the economy. It's detrimental to the future prospects of the young people in this country. We have seen these things, we have witnessed, we have traveled. I mean, we're looking at South Korea currently. It's employed, the nuclear industry has 200,000 employees. 200,000 employees with more than 400 companies, which a quarter of them are just state-owned, others are privately owned. Are we not going to encourage private participation into the nuclear space? So those are the things. I think in our submission, you will see we've got a separate document that clearly deals with the socioeconomic impact of nuclear from the research that we have done and also the analysis that we have done. So, Honorable Chairperson and the portfolio members, we need to interrogate these things and look at South Africa and deal with in the South African way. We cannot mimic something that is happening outside without understanding what is behind there. I mean, if I have an economy that is based on a certain technology which I can support, I don't mind losing money to the debt equation, because I've got less people who are depending on social grants. And we've seen that in Germany. We've seen that in the U.S. The USA has a lot of people in the R&D space because they have got an industry. So is Germany. So is China. Do we have that industry? We need to put this thing on a seesaw. The pros versus the cons, and what is best for the country. High unemployment of youth must be a driver also. And that's what we are saying. Thank you.
That as the National Union of Mine Workers, we organize on both mining and energy, which the IRP 5, the IRP 2018 has currently proposed directly impacts us. The National Development Plan of Vision 2030, as it is known, indicates that by the year 2030, there should be about 11 million jobs that are created in the country. And it is our understanding that any policy must have as a primary objective an intent to alleviate poverty, to reduce inequalities, and to reduce unemployment. And we've observed that as South Africa, we are a country that likes experimenting, even things that have been experimented by others, which have proven not to work. The country as it is now is choking from the renewables. The workers are choking from the fact that we were made to believe at a time when the nuclear program was put to a stop that this was a very expensive option. And our understanding was that anything that comes then would be less expensive or cheaper for the country, meaning its citizens in the main. The recent increases of electricity by NERSA have been primarily been dedicated at addressing the finances of the private individuals that are benefiting from the IPPs at the expense of ordinary citizens. The country as it is now does not need any further research but cannot afford the renewable energy as it is now. We have absolutely no problem with the mix of renewables, but we must not be subjective when we choose the technologies that we must use. And our view as the National Union of Mine Workers is that the current program, the current IRP 2018, has been drafted with high degree of subjectivity to benefit the very few individuals that have interest in the IPPs. We saw in the IRP that there is a drive to reduce carbon emissions. But when we dig deeper, we were very surprised to discover that South Africa is contributing a mere 1.1% in the total global CO2 emissions, and that South Africa was not held at gunpoint when it made a commitment that it is going to reduce its carbon emissions by 2025 by about 35%. This was a generous commitment, meaning we are not compelled to have the carbon emissions reduced by 2025 at the expense of the country and at the expense of the majority. And it is our firm view as the National Union of Mine Workers that we need to find working solutions and working technologies, and those, as we currently understand, are not the renewable energies as currently proposed. But Comrade Kangela is going to take us through the presentation. But our observation is that the current IRP is addressing and assisting the current status quo, which is reversing the gains of this country and which is contributing to the negative trends of high unemployment rate that we're seeing in this country. Because the number of job losses that we're seeing currently projected as a result of this and the cost of electricity as a result of the IPPs is unimaginable and uncomprehendable. And we therefore say we cannot continue even making proposals such as this at the expense of the entire country. Comrade Kangela, over to you.
Thank you, Comrade Soso, and the chairperson of the portfolio committee, and honorable member, and the comrades that are here. It's nice to talk after the young people. We have decided to come and present as the NUM. We realize that technocrats are sitting down and deciding on behalf of workers. And we said, no, let us make our own contribution as well. The presentation has got the following things in it. Introduction and background, aims and objectives of IRP, which is security of supply, minimizing cost of electricity, minimizing environmental impact, minimize water usage, and then the proposed energy mix, and then our submission. In the introduction and background, the NUM notes the release of the draft IRP 2018 draft. The NUM observes that the new draft, has changed the country's proposed energy mix drastically. We have noted the reduction of the future coal usage. We have also noted the elimination of the nuclear build completely from the draft. We also observe that the introduction of the renewable energy independent power producers is intensified, as Comrade Sosa has said. The plan aims to ensure security of supply, to minimize cost of electricity, to minimize environmental impact, and to minimize water usage. We will concentrate on these four primary aims while critiquing and making progressive proposals to the draft plan. As we said, those are the four aims of the and objectives of the IRP, as it is reflected in the document. In our critique on security of supply, we are saying the following. The only way to achieve the security of supply as a country is to have reliable baseload electricity. The proposed energy mix by the draft IRP 2018 does not in any way provide a reliable and stable baseload. Baseload is defined as the energy plants or power stations that are able to produce electricity at a constant or near constant rate. And we are saying the proposal that is in the IRP now will not in any way provide a baseload. We can see that in 2030, we'll only have 26% of coal, and nuclear will remain at 2.5. And we know that Quebec will reach its lifespan soon. So actually, the aim is to eliminate nuclear completely. We can see that there's a proposal to use gas to compensate for when there is no wind and when the sun is not. Because you see, when you depend on wind and sun, you must know that the wind does not blow every day and the sun does not shine every day. Sometimes it does not shine. Sometimes the wind does not blow and then you don't have electricity. You have instability in the grid. So your energy, your security of supply is affected. And we know that gas is going to be used to assist when this thing is, but gas is very, very expensive. And we don't have it in South Africa. It's expensive because we'll buy it in dollars, like the young people have said. If you buy something in dollars, when the dollar rent problem starts, you have problems. And then on the issue of minimizing the cost of electricity, the proposed plan will fail to minimize the cost of electricity. This is due to the proposed structure of the IRP having to sell electricity to Eskom based on the signed power purchase agreement, PPA. The present agreement compels Eskom to buy electricity from the IPPs at 2.14 rand and sell it at 90 cents or 89 cents. This arrangement will force Eskom to increase the price of electricity, so that it can be able to cover the shortfall between 89 cents and 14 cents. That is not good for poor people. It's not good for the industry. It's not good for investment. And we're saying at the end, the consumers will have to pay more for electricity. This will defeat the aim of the IRP, which is to minimize the cost of electricity. And we know now that Quebec is the cheapest, is producing the cheapest electricity in the country. This is reflected in the Eskom financial statement as well, that the cheapest electricity in the country is coming from Quebec. We so wish that the apartheid government should have built maybe 3 or 4 Quebecs. It's because now we're going to be paying very less electricity. And then the issue of minimizing water usage. Research has shown that water usage for the generation of electricity can be reduced by the new coal and the nuclear technology. Midupi and Kusile will use less water than Crossley and Komati. That's a scientific fact. You see, and even the young people actually have talked to this this issue. Quebec, for example, now can produce its own water and use its own water. It does not need the water from the municipalities. So if you want to really save water, maybe you must build more Quebec. In South Africa, agriculture alone uses 63% of the water, and the domestic usage is 31%, and industry, including the generation of electricity, is only 6%. So it is just irrational that we focus on power generation when we talk of to reduction of water usage, than focusing on the biggest users. Yeah, and we see that the reducing of water usage cannot be the reason why we cannot use coal and nuclear. It is only used to justify the case for solar and wind. Because in solar and wind, it is said that there is no usage of water there. But there are other problems with solar and wind. Yeah, we have attached a document that talks about water usage in the country, what we talked about as a proof that it is identified. But you can't open it because it's not with not at all. And this IRP. In the IRP, we see that coal will be reduced to 46%, and nuclear will be reduced to almost zero. And then we are saying, no, there's a problem there. Because you can't depend on the 15% of gas, and you can't depend on wind and solar as base loads. Because those things are not reliable. They are not stable, they are not reliable. And then we are making the following submissions at the NMEA. That the reduction of coal in the mix be reversed. South Africa is one of the countries which still have huge coal reserves. We can't just stop using this strategic resource. What we suggest is that we venture into clean coal technology. We understand the issue of we don't have, we must reduce carbon dioxide emissions. But there are technologies. You know, there are technocrats, young people, educated, they understand these things. That there are technologies like Dubi. It's not emitting as the old power stations because of the new technologies. South Africa is exporting 92% of coal used in Africa. Eskom stated on its website that South Africa has more than 200 years worth of coal left. What are we going to do with that if we stop using coal? You see, what's going to happen is we will be forced to mine that coal and import it to China or other countries and they burn the coal to the same atmosphere that we are saying we were safe. And they push their, they support their economies with our own coal, damaging the atmosphere. That we are saying we are too generous in South Africa, we don't want to damage. See, that doesn't make sense. It's actually madness and stupidity. The reduction of coal usage in the proposed mix means that we will use less coal in South Africa to produce electricity. What worries us is, I've said this, yeah, coal will be mined and will be used by other countries. That is worrying. And then continuing on our submission, the 15% portion of gas in the energy mix be reduced to 5%. Until such time, we are guaranteed as a country that gas is available to run the open cycle gas turbines. Because now we are using diesel to run this thing. This comrade next to me is from Agelec. If you can tell you when they run those units, how much money they burn a day, it's a lot of money. And if we don't have stable national grid or base load, we are going to be forced to ban the diesel. That is a problem. I've said that. South Africa needs to grow the economy in order to address challenges of unemployment and reduce level of poverty. The envisaged drop in electricity demand is not ambitious. It does not talk to the problems of the country. It assumes the worst is going to continue. The danger will be... The danger with the assumption proposed is that if the economy can recover, the country will be plugged into load shedding. We therefore propose that the coal remain at 40,000 megawatts as it is today. What does that mean? It means when you remove coal, when you remove a coal power station, you must build another power station, coal power station, to replace the megawatts that were supplied by that power station. Replace coal with coal. That's what you're saying. Don't try to be fancy and replace coal with renewables. We see these mirrors everywhere. And the turbines, the wind turbines, you see them. But we know they're not reliable. And the policy of the NUM on the mix is clear, saying no, we want the mix. The mirrors and the wind must be there. But at a reasonable ratio with the other technologies. The NUM is not in support of the concept of pass-through. We're not in support of that. We believe this method will bankrupt ESCOM and render it insolvent if it continues. The government and the IPPs must find other ways of collecting revenue than using ESCOM. It cannot be correct and be allowed to continue that ESCOM will buy electricity at 2.14 cents and sell it at 98 cents. No business in this world can survive if it buy a product at a higher price and sell it at a lower price. That business is going down the gorge, going down the drain. This arrangement is not sustainable, the arrangement of buying from pass-through. It will bankrupt ESCOM. We suggest that let the big mines in the electric space come together to find another way which is not going to destroy ESCOM. As we're sitting here, ESCOM is in a big financial problem. One of the reasons is this thing. I thank you. Maybe Comrade Soso wants to add something.
Yeah, Chair, just lastly, the stoppage of the usage of coal. You will be aware that in many mining towns, the mining companies have a social responsibility of supporting the communities with their social services. Once we talk about stopping of using coal, we will be directly impacting those residents that are residing in those towns, and that can be at the best interest of the country. And every time when we watch the committees, we watched the SCOP a few weeks ago, holding ESCOM executives accountable for the financial issues that are at ESCOM. And yet, right here, decisions are made that are going to destroy the whole country. You can't say by retrenching people and holding government officials to account, you are solving the ESCOM financial crisis whilst you are continuously signing for IPPs for long term, knowing very well that you are signing for them at a loss. So our call as the National Union of Mine Workers is that we stop with these IPPs. We find a way of addressing them and of addressing the issues of the energy mix. And we must all save South Africa and review, the right review or objective review of this IRP will be the real safe South Africa for everyone. And unfortunately, the most marginalized are unable to come here and make presentations. It is the people who have access to resources to sway the researchers to suit their benefit. If you can call the ordinary citizens to come here, you ask them a simplest question on how they've been impacted by the electricity increase, which was as a result of the IPPs, and maybe make your decision based on that. You will come up at a different conclusion with respect to what must happen with this current IRP. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just to clarify what Comrade Daniela was talking about when he spoke about the cost of running the OCGTs. One unit of the OCGTs per hour, it takes 36,000 liters of diesel to run. Then you multiply that by 14 OCGTs that we had in the country. If you constantly run that station, we run diesel of South Africa out. We actually have to export diesel from other countries. Now, talking about 2030 having 50% of coal. But the IRP is not talking about construction of gas to those stations so that we make sure that we don't run those gas stations with diesel, but using real gas like it is called, the OCGTs. So it is called gas turbines, but they are being run by diesel currently. And the IRP doesn't have a plan of where we're going to get that diesel. But we have a plan of when we're going to shut down the coal stations. Thank you, Chair.
I see that you've taken over my meeting. So you must be very careful with workers. You don't leave power lying around, they seize it. Okay. No thanks. NUF. I'm sure I can say this to you. I may be making progress. When I was still there, so I know the new position was coal and no nuclear. So I hear now you say no. We accept Kuber. Maybe we need four more. So you are now moving further to say no, first we accept renewables, but can we discuss cost and pace? So this is making progress. So I think from just saying coal and nothing else to saying we accept the energy mix, it's a very good progress. We can discuss the details. So thanks very much. We accept this. We in fact had a discussion. I think last week the problem is we can only get the communities around Cape Town here to come. But they are coming next week. We do accept. And I think the Parliament has recognized this before, that we are not always the voice of the voiceless here. Because when we ask people to come and make presentations here, it is those who have resources, who can do research, who are able to come here and make presentations. So it is an issue that I think we are mindful of. And so next week we're having an open discussion with the communities around here. And we know that we can almost expect that they are not going to discuss the IRP with us. They're going to tell us, this electricity is expensive. Do something about it. So we'll hear from them next week. So just that we're not in a position, unfortunately, to get more of our people who are outside of Cape Town and outside of the Western Cape. But so we can have our last presentation for today. I see that Mr. Court had lined up the nuclear people before we close. So
Mr. Chair and Portfolio Committee, I can only think that Mr. Kutzer doesn't like us at all.
Oh, yes, he does. That's why we put you at the end. So that we can respond to all the things that have been said.
I could see that, but I don't want to become involved in a polemic. Well, we might comment lightly on some of the other aspects, but we will provide detailed comments before the due date. Maybe just one or two things before we dive into the presentation properly. Although we think, as WWF, it's important to provide input into the draft IRP, I think that you cannot look at this document without looking at the larger context. And I think if you talk larger context, then you must think about the global imperative to address climate change, and that is to keep emissions below 1.5 degrees, to prevent catastrophic things that will impact on humanity everywhere. I think it's looking at global trends that will impact on South Africa's competitiveness. I think it's looking at how the energy system is changing already, and we see it in South Africa in the way that cities are increasingly being impacted by private investment in embedded generation, which is impacting on their revenue flow, it impacts on their ability to cross-subsidize necessary services, it impacts on their ability to subsidize electricity provision to the indigent. This is going to happen regardless, and the IRP needs to speak to these three critical issues. I think, furthermore, WWF is committed to a just transition to a low-carbon transition, which means that it will not be a case, or it should not be a case of willy-nilly closing coal power stations, closing down mines, that there's a committed will needed from both the private and the public sector to manage this transition. And that will entail upskilling, redeployment. But I cannot urge the committee stronger to realize that coal is a sunset industry, and we can wait for it to die on us, or we as a country can proactively manage the process. Lastly, and to conclude on my introductory comments, I'd like to point out that probably of most of these people presenting today, we are technology agnostic. We have no interest in any one particular technology. We are not punting gas. We are not punting coal. We're not punting nuclear. All that we want to see is an energy future for South Africa that's the cleanest, that doesn't impact on our water sources, that doesn't pollute our soils, that doesn't impact on the health of our people. That is the only outcome that WWF wants to see. We have no vested interest in pushing any particular technology. It's not going to benefit us financially at all. So to continue on that, just briefly our roadmap, and I think the committee would also be thankful to know that we will probably move our presentation quite briefly, touching on just one or two key things that we think is of import and keeping our more detailed comments for later. We're going to start with some positive feedback, and then my colleague will speak to the climate imperative and global trends. And I will then return to quickly looking at aspects around coal, gas, and then issues around municipalities and cities, which I think has been an absent voice to date. So if we look at some of the positive things, of course, we're glad that from an energy perspective and from a clean energy perspective and from a low-carbon perspective, an environmental aspect, that renewable energy features quite prominently in the IRP. We like the fact that there's more diversity. We like the fact that there's no provision made for nuclear until 2030. And really, a lot of things have been bandied around today about the cost and the cheapness of nuclear. But very little has been said about the lack of transparency in procurement, about the overrun in large-scale nuclear projects elsewhere in the world, and very little has been said about overruns on large-scale mega projects in South Africa as well. I'm sure those costs will be interrogated, as will all the other costs that, are mentioned in the RFP. So I'm going to leave it at that point. And then, of course, the need to, acknowledge our coal-fired power plants and, many of these aspects I'm going to return to now, so I'm not going to spend any more time at this stage. I'm going to hand it over to my colleague at this point.
Thank you, Louise. I want to bring to notice of the chair some key global trends. These figures are from International Energy Association, which reported that in 2017, a record 157 gigawatt of renewable power, excluding hydro, were commissioned globally. The costs of renewables are declining, and also investment of almost 280 billion US dollars were made globally in renewable energy. In parallel, countries like India and France, they have set up an international solar alliance, and a couple of weeks ago, the Prime Minister of India said that there is no reason why solar cannot be OPEC of the future. So I think there is a vision and leadership which is needed, and it's not going to be easy, but energy transition is starting to happen in some countries. But the preparedness of countries varies. In terms of developed countries, countries such as Sweden, Finland, and Germany with its renewable policy, Energy Wende, already in 2010 pushed for renewables. Sweden, which had up until now 40% of its electricity from nuclear and 40% from hydro, has a policy that by 2040 it will go 100% renewable, and it doesn't consider nuclear as renewable. So we need to question why developed countries like Sweden are going nuclear-free in future. There are many developing countries, including, again, India, Kenya, and Mexico, who are starting to shift towards a future driven by renewable energy. I would also like to bring to your notice a recent report by World Economic Forum on Energy Transition Index, and it ranked 114 countries and found that South Africa has the least flexible electricity system in the world. Out of 100 points, it gave South Africa 0.5 points, not even one out of 100. So that's the level of our inflexibility. And it ranks second last in terms of energy transition preparedness. Yeah. So it's a useful report to look at that what other countries are doing and where we stand in terms of energy transition preparedness. And a couple of speakers referred to the IPCC's special report on 1.5 degrees Celsius, which was released on 8th of this month. One of the key findings of the report or the recommendation was that we only have 12 years left to take the necessary steps to prevent climate change. It says that if steps are not taken now, if decisions are not taken now, then we will already be in a 1.5 degrees Celsius world by 2030. So this is not next generation. This is not 200 years. This is 12 years. I would also like to bring to your notice the 13th Global Risk Report, which identifies five top global risks in terms of likelihood and in terms of impact. You would notice that out of the five, three are environmental in nature. So extreme weather events and natural disasters and failures of climate change mitigation and adaptation. Please also note that these three risks are there in top five in terms of likelihood as well as impact. No other risk is in both parameters, which means the priorities, the investors are starting to take note of the global risk in terms of environmental issues. Another issue which is one needs to bear in mind is that the way decisions are taken today or the business as usual policies could easily translate into 140 million climate migrants by 2050. This is as per World Bank study. And with impending climate change, this figure can easily increase. Now, I would also like to bring to your attention some salient findings of the 1.5 degrees Celsius report by IPCC. And I would also like to highlight that the report was approved by the government of South Africa as it was approved by all nations. So this report, the summary for policymakers, has been witnessed by the South African government also. And it provides the latest science on the issues which are of relevance to climate change. And it says that human activities have already caused 0.87 degrees Celsius of global warming above pre-industrial levels. And it says that with high confidence. It's very confident that this has already happened. And it also says that climate-related risks are higher for global warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius than at present, but they are lower than at 2 degrees Celsius. So what is the difference between a 1.5 degrees Celsius world and 2 degrees Celsius world? It could mean a difference of 10 centimeters in terms of global mean sea level rise. So a world in, if you are able to limit our greenhouse gas emissions and the global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius to 1.5 degrees Celsius, then it will be better for us. Similarly, there are reduced risks to marine biodiversity, fisheries, ecosystems, and their functions, reduced risks from droughts and precipitation deficits, which means there's another important point that these risks will not be distributed uniformly across the world. In some places, they will be higher. In other places, it will be lower. But we don't know how it will play out. I would like to bring to your notice an important statement, especially from South African perspective. The report says that countries in the tropics and southern hemisphere subtropics are projected to experience the largest impacts on economic growth due to climate change should global warming increase from 1.5 degrees Celsius to 2 degrees Celsius. So the largest impacts on economic growth. So we have been emphasizing growth, but this is a fundamental risk for our growth projections. Climate action is dependent on strong energy action, and in all the pathways of 1.5 degrees Celsius, renewables are projected to supply 70 to 85% of electricity in 2050 at a global level, and this is again with high confidence. While the usage of coal shows a steep reduction to close to 0% in 2050, this is again with high confidence, and this is the chair mentioned about evidence-based policy, and this is the strongest evidence we have on as per research as of now. Also, there are estimates that the total annual average energy-related mitigation investment going forward annually would be around $900 billion, which I think is a strong, big opportunity for us to consider. And also bear in mind that this influences investors' sentiment. Lastly, I want to bring to your attention what I think we think are the key message for South Africa. The report mentions, the summary for policymakers mentions that mitigation consistent with 1.5 degrees Celsius pathways create risks for sustainable development in regions with high dependency on fossil fuels for revenue and employment generation. This, I would say, applies to South Africa, and this is a statement with high confidence, which the scientists have written with high confidence. In the graph, you would notice it provides four representative scenarios with different assumptions. And all of them foresee steep reduction in coal from minus 59 to minus 78% by 2030 and almost 97% reduction by 2050. So I just want this slide to emphasize what my colleague mentioned, that coal is a sunset industry, and we need to rethink about it. The report also mentions that limiting the risk would imply system transitions that need to be enabled by increase in adaptation, mitigation, policy instruments, and acceleration of both technological innovations and behavioral change. So I wanted to bring this to importance, and I wanted to finish by just bringing to attention one small line from the chapter 4 of the report, which is on implementation. It says that the political, economic, social, and technical feasibility of solar energy, wind energy, and electricity storage technologies has improved dramatically over the past 3 years, while that of nuclear energy and carbon dioxide capture and storage in the electricity sector have not shown similar improvements. And this is from the best science available today. Thank you.
Maybe moving more specific now to the RFP 2016. In essence, what this slide is asking the country is to decide how best do we spend our resources. In this instance, the 20 to 23 to 28 billion for the two new coal-fired plants. Do we spend it on building two coal-fired plants that's going to end up pushing us over and above our commitments under the NDC? Or are we going to use that money perhaps to address some of the issues that were raised by NUM to reskill, to retrain, and to create other industries that I would argue would provide cleaner and nicer jobs to existing mine workers? I think that is the critical question that must be asked. Secondly, and already highlighted in my introduction, we know the environmental impacts of coal. We know that it impacts on our water quality, we know it impacts on our soil quality, we know that it impacts on our air quality. Much was said about new clean coal-fired plants, new technologies, clean technologies. This does not cover the impacts of coal mining that will have to continue in order to feed those coal-fired plants. And we do know that in South Africa we have an existing problem with the rehabilitation of existing coal mines already. So technologies in the coal-fired plants, that is one issue. What's happening in the mining side is yet another issue that needs to be addressed. So if we in agreement, and WWF would strongly argue that ideally there should be no new coal in the IRP, and I would argue that if you sit with seems now up to 28 billion to play with, that it might be very feasible to reimburse those two IPPs that have incurred costs to date to go away. Given the existing climate where the World Bank, Standard Bank Charter, have all indicated that they will not fund any new coal anymore, one might also hazard a guess that it's going to become increasingly difficult for these projects to get advantageous financing, firstly. And secondly, one can assume, given what has been said to date in these submissions, that there is also going to be legal challenges to these two IPPs going ahead. Secondly, I would argue that maybe thought should be given on whether the existing units of Medupi and Kusile must be completed. This in view of low future demand, low future growth projected. I ask this over and above the fact that we would argue we do not need extra coal in the system. Is the issue of stranded assets that were raised before? We might end up completing these units at great cost and then find that we do not need that additional capacity. Lastly, speaking to the point of reducing the amount of coal in our electricity mix, although WWF welcomes the fact that coal plants will be decommissioned over 50 years, we think that that should be revisited. Many of the existing plants do not comply to existing clean air environmental regulation. Many of those plants sit with existing supply issues, as is detailed in great detailed with and great length in the ERC report, and that there's definitely an opportunity to phase out these plants earlier, but with a very important provision, if this should happen, this should happen in a managed way with private sector and government working together so that it's not a question of unilateral retrenchments, but that there's a managed process to reskill and employ these workers elsewhere. Then, although WWF, and moving on to gas, acknowledges the fact that gas is a transition fuel and that it can manage and it's necessary to manage peaks and base load, there are some questions on how this amount was arrived at. We also have questions on some of the assumptions on future gas costs. We think that working with a purely inflation rate probably underestimates future costs and the future impacts that it might have on electricity prices. And that probably from our deal perspective, we should source our gas locally. Having said that, WWF has done quite extensive work on fracking and would argue that there is not enough research that has been done about the long-term environmental and economic benefits of fracking in South Africa, and that much more work needs to be done before we can continue on that path. And lastly, that there's already questions about the extent and the quality of the gas. And just to maybe a final point in this regard, we know that we are a water-scarce country, that our water is precious, and I would argue that we must think very carefully about engaging in an activity that can prejudice that very scarce and very precious resource. Then just lastly, to go to what I raised at the beginning, and that is the role of cities. Now, cities produce about 40 or distribute about 40% of current electricity demand. They are very dependent on their sale of electricity to their residents. They use that money, that revenue, to cross-subsidize other services, to cross-subsidize the indigent. What is happening is that people are migrating off the grid in any event, and municipalities are losing revenue. So for municipalities, keeping the electricity price as low as possible is critical to keep the existing business model either as it is, or I would argue in a rapidly evolving way, changing into numerous business models, one more focused to services rather than merely on sale of electricity. They are going to increasingly looking at a cash crunch. Cities also have a valuable role to play in managing demand, to drive efficiencies. And as such, it's problematic that they've been in this entire process with the IRP, and I quote Salga, has been treated as passive receivers. The sort of quite arbitrary limited on better generation, one wonders whether that was agreed upon in consultation with cities that sit with very real data on what is happening with the existing demand and what the impacts are of already private investment in renewable energy, which is going to happen regardless, irrespective of what the IRP says in the final instance. And as such, WWF would argue that there's a clear imperative for national government to work with especially the metros to inform this IRP going forward so that what's happening on a national level can actually support cities in order to allow them to remain sustainable, especially financially sustainable. And just to re-emphasize that point, not doing that actively disregards the active role that cities can play in managing the grid, in supporting energy efficiencies, in shaving off peaks, in managing a peak, in sort of supporting baseload provision. So I cannot stress the point enough. And then just lastly, some high-level points that might be slightly beyond the ambit of the IRP. I've already emphasized the point of a just transition, and I think that rethinking the way that we and how we provide electricity already offers many opportunities. New power, renewable energy power generation should be situated close to existing coal-fired plants, coal mining activities, so that there's an easier migration or possibility of a much easier migration from existing jobs to potential new jobs, and of course the need for retrofitting and upskilling, and to a large extent one would expect Eskom to come forward with a much more comprehensive plan on what the company intends to do in that regard. And then of course there's a real need to rethink our electricity system as a whole. I'm not going to belabor this point. I'm sure the Portfolio Committee and the Chair has heard this often, but we need to rethink how we're going to transform our electricity system so it's responsive to what the future is going to entail rather than to try and embed the past. And final point, I think the nuclear lobby made a lot of noise about job creation and opportunities. But renewable energy and renewable energy technologies afford many opportunities over and above for highly qualified nuclear scientists. We sit at the bottom of a continent where increasingly there's a level of uptake of small-scale renewable energy technologies that's unprecedented. East Africa last year was the second largest market for small-scale PV systems. Those are things that we could quite easily manufacture here. Labor intensive, easily to set up. And I would argue that is what we should think of. We should stop thinking purely electricity. This RFP provides us the opportunity to rethink our system and how we can use our electricity system not only kickstart new sectors, new opportunities, but of course, as my colleague pointed out, address climate change. Thank you.
That's too weak. Thanks very much for that presentation. See that the time is now 5:20. I think it is time to break. Well, it depends what you want to do after breaking, but we'll break. Honourable members, I must thank you for staying this late. I don't know what happened to the other members. They have other engagements. Oh, yeah. I can see there's only ANC members remaining. Thanks a lot. Mr. Kose, is there something to say? You should say that.
The public hearings will continue next week, Tuesday the 23rd, Wednesday the 24th, and Friday the 26th as well. So, they are sitting in the afternoon, so it's just from 10 to 1.
Let's clarify that Friday in the morning to cover Honorable Matlala, otherwise he will not come.